It's showtime.
Conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we are, one day shy of the 14th online birthday of the horn, and well into our 16th year of broadcasting here. Tomorrow is our horniversary, and we'll be getting together, hopefully, for a big old front porch for anybody who wants to wander in. I'm sure there will be more madness to talk about, but we'll have some cyber cake and cyber ice cream and lift a cyber cider glass, whatever. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you go for all your horn broadcasting and podcasting needs. Practically every platform imaginable is available there for getting the podcast, as well as the chat room link, where you can wander by and be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room and has, been an integral part of this broadcast for about as long as we've been around in one form or another. And minding the store this evening is pinch hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Early arrivers Anatole and Dowhead are also waiting for you there. Yes, indeed, Steve from Georgistan saying, cyber bourbon, please. And a straw, right? No fun without the straw. Loud and clear on TuneIn, reports Steve in New York. Brother Deacon Asa letting us know, hot on both bullhorns. Bullhorns from the pulpit. Name it and claim it for Lord Jeebus. Heck glory. Because it is, of course, prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn. And, well, you know who I am. I'm Bob Kincaid. The deacons have the night off, and that's a good thing. That's a good thing indeed, because the little old blue-haired ladies got their shipment in from Benton's Country Hams in East Tennessee, and they said about that whenever you get a ham from them, they send you the hocks, too, and mercy sakes, they got busy. There was a massive cauldron of bean soup with cornbread. Goodness gracious, sakes alive. And those ham hocks just slowly simmering in them all day long. Oh, the deacons were willing to. Oh, it was like a crusade to get at those beautiful tender hunks of ham, and the little old blue-haired ladies added a little bit more ham to the cooking pot, and alongside the cornbread and the green onions and the butter, and it was a happy. A fellowship hall full of dining prayer meeting Wednesday attendees. Yes, it was. And some of that four-layer pie with the home-baked crust with the pecans in them and the sweetened cream cheese and the chocolate filling and the whipped topping atop with the little old blue-haired ladies shaved the chocolate shavings over the top of it all. And the deacons wiped that out too, because like I said, they knew they had the evening off, so there wasn't even any sense in Sister Carol Baker getting the Horn solar-powered cattle prod out, we knew the Deacons would be worthless. And so when they were done, chain-smoking with the sinners, well, they just wandered in. They ambled insouciantly through the vestibule and strolled down the center aisle. They didn't even bother standing up for the beginning of the service. They just plopped their massive bulk down into the cushioned seats there, the cushioned folding auditorium seats at the front of the Cathedral of Common Sense. And, yeah, that's what I thought. Looks, they're not even conscious anymore. They're plumb passed out. They're snoozing. I may have to yell a little bit during this evening's program just to let the Deacons know that I'm in on their game. Mm-hmm. So, James in Illinois says, as long as you're taking orders, I'll take a single malt scotch. Never mind, I've got some stashed away. Well, you got enough to share, James? Yeah. But that's not for tonight. That's for tomorrow. Tomorrow's the Horniversary. And I want to thank everybody who made it possible for us to be done with fundraising, because we have not one, but two extra days of fundraising free radio. To end the month. And that's a wonderful thing. Every program here does begin with gratitude, however. So thanks go out to Bernice, Betty Boop, and to Philip in Maryland, to our buddy at Mellow Moonlit Meadow, and to Stacy. Those are all of our subscribers for the 23rd day of the month. Thank you so very kindly for being partial sponsors of the program and making it possible for us to have a full 7 days of fundraising free radio here at the end of October. Thank you very much indeed. Where to begin with this prayer meeting Wednesday? Well, I mean, we got prayer meeting-ish news. And I guess we can begin with that, because today was an especially stupid day. There was more testimony to be taken in the skiff, the secure room two floors down in the basement of the Capitol. And in the skiff, you can't bring cell phones or recording devices, or you can't even bring a chisel and stone tablets to, no. Because it's supposed to be used for intelligence purposes and to be absolutely secure. And the maggot pissing and moaning has been going on for, a week now. Or right, Adam Schiff there, he's having secret impeachment meetings and whatnot. And it ain't right, Jesus. There's only one problem. Every member of the House committees doing these investigations are welcome in these hearings. It's a relatively small room. But if you're a member of that committee, Republican or Democrat alike, you're there, and you've got a right to question witnesses. And so the Republicans are in the room. But the really, really smelly, steamy, fly-blown maggots, they're not there. That's why... Holy shit, Matt Gaetz, and I know he's from the Florida Panhandle. Does he hold the same congressional seat that Joe Scarborough used to hold? If not, they're probably adjacent. But the same sorts of voters, you know. Confederate flags on the back of pickup trucks and the sticker with the Confederate soldier on it with the battle flag slung over his shoulder and says, "Forget hell." and other stickers that say, "The South will rise again." Those folks sent Matt Gaetz, and before him, those kinds of folks sent Joe Scarborough to the Congress. In fact, the parts of the panhandle of Florida are also often referred to as L.A., Lower Alabama. And as James and a couple of others pointed out, it is, in fact, it's reminiscent of the Brooks Brothers riot in Miami-Dade County back in the waning months of 2000, some 19 years ago, in which Republicans tried to intimidate their way into stopping a vote count and largely succeeded. And that's how we wound up with George W. Bush. That's how we wound up with 9/11. It's how we wound up with the attack on Afghanistan and the illegal attack on the innocent people of Iraq. That's how all that happened. And, you know, the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian Republicans who were oh so eager to go to war in Iraq, you know, well, we got to fight them over there. We'll have to fight them over here. Because, you know, they got that special moose limb power, and they can walk on water with their AK-47s all the way from Iraq over to here, and then we'll be battling them out in every Walmart in America. And besides, Saddam tried to kill W's daddy. And besides, because the Southern Baptist Convention actually made this argument, it's all right for the United States to attack a country. What, done nothing to it? Because Peter owned a sword. Can you remember that far back? My brothers and sisters of the Horn Family Community Congregation, can you? Because I can. Yep, Peter owned a sword. So it's all right to start a war that's going to get 1 million innocent civilians all dead like. Because Peter owned a sword. And it's right there in the Bible where Jesus says, "Pick up thy AK-47 and follow me." Well, the same people that were so eager to go to war, once young Barack Obama began running for president and said that, "I thought that Afghanistan was the right war, and Iraq was the wrong war," and said that we ought to get out of Iraq and made it a campaign promise and eventually pulled most of our troops out of Iraq. Well, then there they were. They was a-hollering, "Oh, my God, that sissy Kenyan Muslim in his tan suit. That there sissy Muslim Kenyan, he's a-cutting and running." And now, the same people, because over the course of these, over the course of these 17 years, just a little longer than I've been back doing this talking on the radio thingamajig, the same people who wanted the war in Iraq wanted to stay in Iraq as long as the Democrat was saying we needed to get out of Iraq, said the Democratic president was a tan suit wearing Kenyan Muslim sissy liberal for wanting to stop the steady flow of cardboard boxes coming home to Dover, Delaware, with, you know, the sons and daughters and aunts and uncles and brothers and sisters and cousins and moms and dads of our citizenry in those cardboard boxes. Because, yeah, that's another thing we learned during the reign of error, was that we were shipping our beloved heroic war dead home in cardboard boxes. You can look it up. Well, they didn't want to get out of Iraq. But then along come a big galumph, an orange adipose lump of fear and insecurity and jealousy and hatreds, and ignorance. And he said, we got to end our forever wars. And they said, yes, Lord Trump, yes, we got to end our forever wars. And he said, only I can solve it. And they said, yes, yes, Lord Trump, only you can solve it. And he said, grab them by the pussy. And they said, yes, Lord Trump, here, grab my wife, because I'm a Christian. And that pretty much gets us up to today. Because now, where before they wanted a half a gajillion American service men and women in Iraq, they don't want none now, because we can't be the policemen of the world. Well, okay, we can have some there as long as they're just going to protect the oil. The oil. Yeah, that's O-I-L, pronounced oil. It's barely even a phoneme. Oh. And so there they were. Matt Gaetz, who has apparently staged a coup and become the head maggot, just snatched it right away from Steve Cantaloupe's King and Louis Asparagus Gohmert. There he was, leading the phalanx in their assault on the skiff. Rules don't matter to these white wing thugs. Not supposed to carry cell phones or recording devices into the skiff, but they carried them just the same. And they got in there, and poor old Democrats didn't even hardly know what to do. They weren't welcome there. They weren't supposed to be there. I mean, after all, Matt Gaetz said, well, it's not like I'm a member of the Agriculture Committee or something. Well, what you're not a member of is the Intelligence Committee, because you are sadly lacking in that characteristic. Under the hashtag Dinner Ruined, Brother Deacon Asa says, better a Kenyan Muslim in a tan suit than a filthy son of a Klansman in a tanned birthday suit. Ew, yeah, that is rough on dinner. You guys are getting a little too good at this. Cowbell for Brother Deacon Asa there. Flavio pointing out some of the Republican members who barged into the skiff ordered pizza while they were there. Some boasted about tweeting from the skiff, which is illegal, and then walked it back, saying the tweets came from staff. What liars and cowards. Now, why the sergeant-at-arms wasn't there to at least escort them out of the skiff the minute the violation occurred is not explained. He arrived an hour late after some of the invading members had ordered pizza from inside the skiff, although speculation as to why there weren't any arrests is that the Democratic leadership didn't want to allow Republicans to portray themselves as victims. But if Democrats had done that, you know what would have happened? I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. And there we go. And there you have it. And it was all because there are people testifying now before the committee that the maggot White House, the maggot-infested White House, it tried to tell that they couldn't testify, and they said, fuck you, I'm not going to prison for your orange ass. And testified anyway. I trust you've had time by now to read the statement from Bill Taylor yesterday. Shit. That is some damning stuff. There was a quid pro quo. And there are so many fallback positions for the maggots. It's if they were falling back from Richmond, they'd be in Atlanta by now. They've gotten into so many fallback trenches. Our buddy Kyle in Kentuckystan put it succinctly. So the GOP has gone from, he's innocent, to, no, wait, I mean, it wasn't explicitly illegal, so, to, well, it was illegal, all hell, everybody does it, get over it, to, Quick, storm the skiff. Shut down the witnesses. Cancel all the hearings or they'll impeach us all by noon because we're all a bunch of fucking criminals. I honestly don't know whether to laugh or cry or shit my pants that these are the people that have the power to control government in this country. Well, I don't mean to be so damn far out ahead of the curve, but you may recall within the last couple of weeks, I pointed out that I did understand why, I could at least understand why dueling was a problem in early, in the early days of this republic. About, a block or so off of, away from the White House over on the Lafayette Park side of things, you can find a bronze commemorative plaque on the corner of a building talking about the fact that that particular space, which is all governmental space now, but that particular space had at one point in time in history been the domicile of one Stephen Decatur. There are Decaturs all over, especially the eastern, east of the Mississippi part of the United States, Decatur, Georgia, Decatur, Tennessee, Decatur, Alabama, Decatur, Illinois. I mean, we're filthy with Decaturs, and they're all named after Stephen, a naval hero. And Stephen Decatur got into it with a fellow naval officer and died of wounds he received dueling. Because, among other things, Stephen Decatur accused one of his fellow naval officers of what essentially amounted to cowardice in the face of the enemy. That kind of shit would get you called out. And, of course, famously, there's Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton. Not so famously, later on, Alexander Hamilton's son proved himself also no good at the whole dueling thing. I don't recall what kind of shitty thing he said about his opponent, and we don't historically know what kind of shitty thing that Alexander Hamilton said about Aaron Burr. And somehow or another, I guess Lin-Manuel Miranda wasn't able to sort that out either. But to the extent that it's about a 24-nanosecond news cycle, we're pretty close to up to date. Yep, Todd in South Carolina, Stan, pointing out, why so chintzy with the cowbell? Stephen Decatur was a badass. I didn't know I was being chintzy with the cowbell. Well, I'm going to take it that that's for Kyle. And that, of course, is for Flavio. Oh, and Jim wants Flavio to know that he spent many a happy hour in the lovely La Crosse, Wisconsin. He enjoyed La Crosse immensely when he was TDY at Fort McCoy and Volk Field, thereabouts. On the subject of Matt Gaetz, Megan says, every time you mention that Representative Matt Gaetz is involved, I know what follows is going to be a whole lot of bullshit. And no small amount of stupid, I will add editorially. And remember when the House Dems held an overnight vigil in the House to protest transparency that was later stopped by the then-Speaker Ryan? Yep. I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. And, you know, one of these days I might have that tattooed on the inside of my forearm over my crepey skin or whatever. Didn't know a damn thing about crepey skin until I started watching ads on my filthy morning habit. And now it just seems like it's everywhere. Crepey skin. I think I need some sort of lotion or something. No, not that way. You people. Flavio adds, got that. Wonder what kind of pizza. They got busted. That's absolutely true. They got busted. And they said, well, no, that tweet was sent by staff. No, it wasn't. Not even a little bit. That's true. Flavio pointing out, Matt Gaetz is Florida man. Well, We'll know he really is Florida man when he finally gets all good and drunk, because we know he does that too. When he gets all good and drunk and decides to take an alligator to the liquor store, then we will know, Lord Jesus, yes, we will know. But it would be, I don't know. Look, I mean, there's a law for us and there's law for them. There's rules for us and rules for them. Would you care to guess what would happen to you, dear brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles and moms and dads and kitties and cousins and friends and neighbors of the Horn Family Community Congregation? Would you care to guess what would happen to you if you were, let's say we got 25 or 30 of us together and decided we just wanted to go into the skiff and hear some testimony? Our asses would be arrested faster than you could say Lev and Igor. For a fact. And if Democrats had tried to do that under the reign of during the reign of error, when any of the Republicans were, whether it was John Boehner or later on during the Obama presidency, Paul Eddie Munster Ryan, those Democrats would have been wearing orange. In a heartbeat. Well, thank you. Flavio says, give yourself a cowbell for the alligator comment. See, Todd, Flavio's not chintzy with the cowbells. Thank you, Flavio. Flavio says, I'm dying. My sides are splitting. Well, there you go. Megan says, we have a Stephen Decatur High School on the eastern shore of Maryland where Julius Geezer held one of his campaign rallies. Oh, God, sometimes I hate it how the universe just stitches all this stuff together. Jesus Christ. Man, now I want pizza. And by the way, we were talking about how the defense, Kyle pointed out how the defense keeps changing. Well, as of this morning, Nitwit Nero was tweeting,
neither he, Taylor, or any other witness has provided testimony that the Ukrainians were aware that military aid was being withheld. You can't have a quid pro quo with no quo. Congressman John Ratcliffe at Fox and Friends, where's the whistleblower? The do-nothing Dems case is dead.
All caps on dead. Well, see, the news cycle is moving so fast now that his tweets are almost debunked before they post. And in this case, it was almost a tie. Because, well, it turns out that the Ukrainian leadership was aware that they were being shaken down. In fact, high-ranking officials in the Ukrainian government were let in on the know in early August that some $391 million in military aid that had been appropriated by Congress was illegally frozen by Chlamydia Claudius in the hopes of using that to twist their arms so that they would participate with him in a dirty scheme to slime what he presumed would be his Democratic opponent in November of 2020, which may well be the case. National polling, it's a little weird, but yeah. Another national poll out today showing Uncle Joe with some 39% support, I think, compared to 19% for Elizabeth Warren and 16% for Bernie. And, oh, Kamala and Pete are down around 6. And, well, Tulsi's just down there watching and kind of licking her wounds. Remind me to get to that one, too. New York Times fucked it up. They actually, well, let's just do that now. The New York Times issued a correction, a rare correction. They actually misquoted Hillary Clinton in the David Plouffe podcast. What she said, it was that there was a Democrat who was being groomed by Republicans for a third party run. Again, she didn't say Tulsi Gabbard. That was Tulsi who jumped up and sang, "It's me, it's me, it's me, oh Lord, standing in the need of prayer. It's me, it's me, it's me, oh Lord." That was her. But the New York Times screwed it all up and were the originators of the idea that Hillary Clinton said that the Russians were grooming a Democratic candidate for a third party run, when she rather clearly said that it was the Republicans. Yeah, oh well. Oopsie. Don't worry. Nobody's going to lose their job at the New York Times. Nobody's going to lose their cushy job as a member of the multimillionaire for-profit media. But nonetheless, the New York Times did report that yeah, the Ukrainians knew that they were being arm-twisted. The Ukrainians knew that they were being shaken down. And that, therefore, Nitwit Nero's morning tweet happened in real time, even as I was engaged in my filthy morning habit trying to slug down my first cup of decaf. So, yeah, there was quid, and there was pro, and there was quo. It was just days after after Venerial Vespasian told Volodymyr Zelensky that he wanted an investigation of Joe Biden and Hunter. He was brand new in the job, Zelensky was. Bill Taylor, in his testimony, said that Ukrainian officials were made aware no later than a September the 1st meeting between Zelensky and who? That's right. Up to his Christian eyebrows in it all, Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geek. So that fell apart in a pretty big-ass hurry. Darlene in Connecticut noting, these GOP ratfuckers acted like goons. They'd met with Trump the day before, and he worked them up into a white, and I do mean white, hot frenzy. Yeah, including, of course, one of my favorite, if you can use that term, one of my favorite maggots, and that would be Mo Brooks, Les Brames of Alabama. Wow. Laura Cooper was testifying today. They burst in as she was getting ready to start, and then she had to go away while the little goon riot went on. And the maggots started screaming at Adam Schiff. Adam Schiff didn't take the bait. But some Democrats did start responding to the screaming maggots. And as Darlene pointed out, Mo Brooks, Les Brames, who represents my hometown in Alabama, Jesus Christ, what are you people thinking? That will probably, more on that in a minute. Moron, get it? Yeah. Well, let's check in with CNN and their interview with Mo Brooks, Les Brames.
When as many as two dozen House Republicans upset over the impeachment inquiry stormed a secure hearing room. Laura Cooper, the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Russia, Ukraine, and Eurasia, was getting ready to answer questions at the time, but she had to be removed as Republicans physically got in the faces of Democrats to protest these proceedings. Our Manu Raju is on Capitol Hill. I mean, this is pretty extraordinary, Manu. Tell us about this.
Yeah, it is. Earlier today, the Republicans who are not part of these proceedings railed on the process. Roughly two dozen or so conservatives came out demanding to be part of this impeachment inquiry. Then they stormed into the secure hearing space where this hearing was supposed to take place. And these members came in. Some of them were still holding their electronics, which is not allowed in the secure hearing space. But they came in demanding to be part of it. One Congressman, Bradley Byrne, I'm told, got in the face of Adam Schiff, the House Intelligence Committee chairman, and yelled at him about the process. Also, Louie Gohmert, a congressman from Texas, also was shouting about the process in this closed-door hearing.
Now, time out real quick. I'm going to back the clip up, then we'll go bring it up into real time. But he said something about, well, remember, while this is for-profit broadcasting over at CNN, and their real purpose has nothing to do with the First Amendment or fulfilling a constitutionally noted role, that of the press, a free press, and it's all just about selling ads. The proof is in the way this is presented. Let's check in with Manu again.
Yeah, it is. Earlier today, the Republicans who are not part of these proceedings railed on the process. Roughly two dozen or so conservatives came.
The Republicans who are not part of these proceedings. That language is marginally correct. The goons who stormed the skiff were not part of the proceedings. But if you're Emory and Marvelline and you've accidentally switched over past Fox News TV Radio Rwanda and for some reason landed on CNN, and there's a one in a million chance that you might actually get some straight information, well, it wasn't there. Because Manu Raju here made it sound like the Democrats had prevented the Republicans from being part of the proceedings. As I noted previously, every Republican on that committee was welcome to be there. And in fact, had been there. And in Bill Taylor's testimony, there were about 75 people, including staff and members, in that relatively small space. And a bunch of those were Republicans who got to ask questions, who got to participate fully. But to hear Manu Raju tell it, the Republicans who weren't allowed to be part of the process, well, Emory and Marvelline are going to sign right up with Matt Gaetz now and say, well, hell, why can't the Republicans be part of it? Them damn Democrats. And I'm going to mention something here that I don't feel like I should have to mention. And with y'all, I don't. But unless I'm mistaken, Adam Schiff is out and gay, isn't he? That's part of this. Because these good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian Republicans are homophobes, too. And so that's why at least a couple of them felt comfortable running up and screaming at Adam Schiff. They thought they would intimidate him because he's gay. Okay? But my point in backtracking here was to point out the journalistic failure involved here in actually catapulting the Republican propaganda, to paraphrase Dim Leader from back during the Reign of Error. We're going to catapult the propaganda. He actually helped him by making it sound like, okay, wait a minute, what? All right, who is it? Okay, Adam Schiff is not gay. Okay. Thank you, Steve. Am I thinking of... one of the more prominent members of the California delegation is gay. Nonetheless, California, they felt, they felt perfectly enabled and privileged to run up and scream. Because, whether it be Matt Gaetz or Louis Asparagus Gohmert or Mo Brooks, Les Brames, these are all hardcore Confederates. But it's that desire to bully and intimidate, and they thought they were going to get away with it because, you know, nobody in California is all rough and tough like somebody from lower Alabama or northwest Alabama is. They don't know about being tough. So thank you for the correction, Steve. I appreciate it. But it wasn't terribly helpful for Manu Raju to suggest that Republicans were not allowed in that hearing. And it wouldn't have been hard to say it in some way that was a lot clearer and less likely to do the Republicans' work for them. A group of Republicans who were not in the hearing because only members of the committee are allowed in the hearing. Or despite the fact that the room was already half filled with Republicans from the committee, these 25 tried to bully their way in. That's another way of putting it. And it's even journalistically objective. But no. We've got a journalism fail. Scott in San Diego says, "Oh, Bob, at long last, sir, have you no long-term memory? Must I again remind you, in California, even if you're not gay, you're still gay. It's just one of the many perks we get by living here." There's probably more truth in that than I care to admit. Adam Schiff is a triathlon athlete, not exactly a wimp, says Flavio. It doesn't matter. I mean, he's a vegan. He probably can't even stand up in a fight with himself. What the hell's wrong with somebody who won't eat a barbecue pork pig sandwich? That ain't even American. You have to understand how people in the Deep South think about people in California, particularly California, New York, and Massachusetts. I've mentioned it before. In the years predating the South starting the Civil War, an idea was floated in one of the, I think it's probably the Richmond paper, I don't know, that a giant ditch be dug around Massachusetts and Massachusetts be floated out to sea. Because Massachusetts was a hotbed of abolitionism. And down south, California is referred to as the granola state. you know, a state full of fruits and nuts. If I had a nickel for every time I heard that growing up, my God, I'd be rich. And if you go to Pat Conroy's, and I know he was a classmate of our buddy Jim's down at the Citadel. If you go to his novel, The Prince of Tides, there's, and again, this is accurate. His character, the protagonist in that book makes the observation that hating New York is a high art for Southerners. But at the same time, while Southerners hate it, they damn sure like to go there from time to time. But when they come back, they got to talk about how much they hated it. Yeah. And so consequently, this really does take on a Confederate flair. It explains why they felt so emboldened to go up and commit what, let's be clear about this, commit the crime of assault against these members of Congress. It varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction a little bit, but good old-fashioned common law assault is the act of putting someone in fear of receiving an immediate, unconsented-to touching of an insulting or provoking nature. You don't have to hit anybody to commit assault. Just standing there screaming in somebody's face is enough. But then you've got the speech and debate clause, which says that that members will not be interfered with going to or coming from and when they are engaged in speech and debate. And even if they were not welcome in the facility because they were not members of the fucking committee, because these maggots cannot be trusted to keep their mouths shut with sensitive information, and they will leak like a sieve, and they were sent there by their God Emperor Master.
Yes, Master.
I mean, coming up on Halloween, pot hump. They were there to engage in witness intimidation on behalf of Donald J. Trump. Because make no mistake, Ms. Cooper had been told not to testify. And again, she said, fuck it, I'm not going to prison for Donald Trump. Right there, Steve, in New York. Southerners hate New York until they want to cite 9/11 as their reason to go to war in order to protect our Constitution, which they then proceed to wipe their asses with. This nation is much more fragile than most people understand. And always has been. Sadly, Jim, that's not ice in my cup. It's just ice in a water bottle. I like to have cold water back here, and so I've got my little bougie water bottle, and it makes a right smart amount of noise. I got a straw, but, you know, but I'm ruining the lovely theater of the mind that is radio. If you need that noise to be tequila, well, or scotch, or anything else. You feel free to, you know what? It could be 750 milliliters of very dry martini with the ice left in. If that's what you need, make it so, number one. And Jim says, Bullshit. I love New York City, says Jim. You ever read Conroy's The Ten? Now, that book really gets in the plebe system at my alma mater. Lord have mercy. Rough. And a brutal place. Brutal place. Now, I've read Conrack and Lords of Discipline and Prince of Tides and The Boo. I don't think I've read The Ten. But the point about all this was to point out the little linguistic failure there of Manu Raju. Now, if you had it from over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, it would be far more overt. Beyond any shadow of a doubt. And yes, from here in West Virginia, as Robert, also here up near Morgantown, points out, Carol Miller, my member of Congress, took place in the riot today, as did Looney Mooney, who's actually from Maryland, but carpet-bagged his way across the Potomac to run in West Virginia. He represents the state capital, Charleston, among other places. Now, you know the shape of the state of West Virginia. It's the only state in the Union that it forms the outline of an obscene gesture. If you have your palm facing you of your right hand and you stick that thumb out and you shoot a bird, that's the shape of West Virginia. Well, Looney Mooney is from way out by your thumbnail, and Charleston is right smack dab in the middle of your palm. How's that for district drawing? But it's going to get a little complicated in a mountainous place like West Virginia, especially since we've only got three, and probably with the census coming in 2020, we'll be down to two. Somebody's going to have to leave. You might recall Carol Miller, my member of Congress, says she never does anything without taking it to the Lord in prayer first. So, Jesus, Jesus apparently told her to go and participate in that there riot down in the basement of the Capitol in the skiff. But thanks, Manu Raju. Thanks so much for helping catapult the propaganda. Now, let's get up here to Mo Brooks, Les Brames. You might want the hockey puck for this.
The Laura Cooper, who was the witness, actually left while this was taking place. But one Democrat did shout back. That is Val Demings. And we're told from a source that she said that she said to these Republicans questioning what they're doing, that saying, is it okay to lie, steal, and cheat so as long as you don't get caught? Now, these Republicans still have not left the room. Some are still there. The Capitol Police have been consulted, as of the Sergeant of Arms, as this hearing has not got yet underway. I did get a chance to catch up with one Republican who was part of this effort, Mo Brooks, and I tried to engage him about the substance, about things that have been revealed by the president's top diplomat in Ukraine, raising concerns about how the president apparently wanted investigations to be announced that could help him politically in exchange for releasing military aid, and Brooks pushed back.
But Mr. Brooks, the opening statement says very clearly, this is not, this is
okay,
what Bill...
The opening statement doesn't make any difference.
Let me finish what I'm saying. Let me finish my question. He says very clearly...
You should not be relying on it.
Why should I be relying on his public testimony?
If you were in a court of law, would you rely just on the opening statement of an attorney?
But let me
or
ask
the first
you,
witness
can
called,
I ask you what
or would
he
you
said?
Have cross-examination? Would you allow rebuttal witnesses to determine, to explore whether the first witness is testimony
about the
was accurate and correct?
I'm asking about the substance of what he said. He
that
said
didn't
that...
make any difference. We don't...
It doesn't make any difference. No difference. I mean, why wasn't there cross-examination? Shh. There was cross-examination. The Republicans were allowed to question the witness. They were allowed to question Bill Taylor. But sometimes, as the old saying goes, and they teach it to you in the first class of probably the first day of first semester of the first year of law school, when you have the facts, you pound on the facts. When you have the law, you pound on the law. And when you have neither, you pound on the table. Or in the case of Mo Brooks, Les Brames, and if you've ever wondered why I refer to him as such, hopefully I've now removed all doubt by playing this clip. Well, you scream, "You can't rely on a statement!" Well, it's not the chairman's statement, it's the statement of the witness, and yes, you can rely on it. But...
Derp! Narf! Know whether what he said is true or not because of the sham process that's being used.
Sham process. Sham wow.
New from...
Shampoo. Sham process. God almighty. Darlene asks, what are they, a gang of something? I'd love to see these freaks plunk down in the middle of some real gang turf. Watch how long they'd last. And compromising our national security, highly classified skiff by bringing electronic devices into it. Can you imagine if Democrats fucked up that badly? And guess what? By simply carrying their devices into that room, as they did damage to our ability to keep things on the down low when we need to keep things on the down low. Because God only knows how many of those maggot phones are compromised as all fuck. Either unwittingly, and when talking about a maggot, unwittingly is a hyper-literal usage, as in with no wits. Either unwittingly or intentionally. Yeah, can you imagine if Democrats fucked up that badly? Okay, in the vein of Trump stupidity, shall we call for these GOP rat fuckers to be censured or impeached? Ha 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 ha! Yeah, they should all be arrested. I hope the Democrats beat this like a Biden drum. Well, they won't. See, because what they were trying to do, these assholes, they were trying to force themselves to be removed from the room by force so that then they could pogo stick up onto the cross and declare their undying martyrdom to Laura Ingraham or Tucker Carlson or some other neo-Nazi over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, or maybe they'd go on Onan. Remember, that's the white-wing news network that's for people who think that Fox is too liberal. And it's a sign that this is still trying to be a liberal democracy or partake of that concept, that the door wasn't locked. They can't get in. It's not like Mo Brooks, Les Brames, brought his burglar's tools and was sitting down there with the little pick and the other little pick and working it. I think I got it. And the stethoscope and 23 left, 16 right. No. They just walked in. They're trying to get the doors locked so that they can say, "Hey, goddamn Democrats are trying, they're going to lock the door because they're..." Well, because you rioted and attacked the process. And it's not like there's not going to come a time when all of this is going to be brought out into the open. Part of this is that these people are freaking out, and I use the term people loosely. They're freaking out because the longer this takes, the worse it gets. Remember, Moscow Mitch was there a week or so ago saying, "Well, I expect we'll probably be having this here wrapped up by Thanksgiving." Thereby trying to impose some sort of artificial bullshit timetable on Nancy Pelosi. Well, he can't wrap anything up until they send him something. And, Thanksgiving? Well, we're going to have this wrapped up by Thanksgiving. If that's the case, looking at the calendar here, your Thanksgiving would be on that most, well, it would be on Thursday, the 21st day of November. And so that's a little over, well, it's 4 weeks and 1 day from this evening, or 4 weeks, four and a half, right, you get the idea. It's today and then 4 weeks. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. But they're losing their shit because their God Emperor is losing his shit. Elbert in Rhode Island says they should have been arrested and then required to make bail for contempt of Congress. Yeah, but the problem is that's why the Capitol Police and the Sergeant at Arms were consulted with, because they may not have been able to be arrested because of the speech and debate clause. James in Illinois says, never ever allow a reporter to ask that question that you know goddamn well is one coming and two, you do not want to answer. Well, that was Mo Brooks, Les Brames. He wasn't going to answer the substantive question asked by Manu Raju, and I presume as a seasoned TV journalist that Manu Raju knew that goddamn, he was not going to goddamn well get a straight answer. And yeah, had they been arrested, as David in South Carolina Stan puts it, they'd go on TV crying, coo, coo. Right. Precisely, David. So Flavio asks, but how are the Democrats to secure the closed-door hearings to prevent those disruptions? Any ideas? Well, they can lock the doors. And then, of course, they have to just suck it up and realize they're going to lose the messaging war. Because they're having closed door hearings behind doors that they've locked now, and Jesus don't approve of that, and it ain't good democracy. But this is just one story. Yeah, Flavio pointing out when a skiff is breached like that, they have to sanitize it again, sweep it for bugs, hidden cams, electronics. That takes a day or so. And in Trump America, you got to wonder about who's going to do that work and whether those people can be trusted. I wouldn't trust anybody coming from the executive branch, would you?
No, here, I'm sending Shifty Schiff a really nice portrait of George Washington, who did business just like I do business. Right. Now, tell Shifty Schiff, when he has something to say it directly to the face of George Washington, and say it right at his mouth, because there where the wooden teeth are, that's where Pootie had me put the microphone.
Yeah, it's just like the microphone in the picture of Hitler in Hogan's Heroes, right? Oh, I miscalculated. 5 weeks from tomorrow. 5 weeks from tomorrow. Thanksgiving is always the fourth Thursday in November, which means it can't be the 21st. Instead, it's the 28th. Thank you, Randy and PA. Me and Cyphron. Pointing to the House calendar, Scott in San Diego says they don't operate in normal time, Bob. It's all about when the representatives are in town and those are the working days. There's no fucking way this process is done by Thanksgiving. No, and no one, and Nancy Pelosi is not going to allow herself to be forced onto some arbitrary schedule. Because, again, and it's only fair to point this out, every day that this extends, that's another day that the candy man has to go in and work on the dosage and try to keep Nitwit Nero from stoking the stroke. Obligatory Star Trek reference coming from Lee in New York. Your description of your drink reminded me of the dialogue from The Cage. Magistrate: the vial contains a nourishing protein complex. Pike: is the keeper actually communicating with one of his animals? Magistrate: if the form and the color is not appealing, it can appear as any food you wish to visualize. Pike: and if I prefer to starve? You overlook the unpleasant alternative of punishment. Pike is surrounded by fire and brimstone, screaming in pain. Magistrate: from a fable you once heard in childhood, you will now consume the nourishment. Yeah, some high-quality H2O is what that is. No. Well, the 11 hours weren't. Albert asks, wasn't the 8-hour interrogation Hillary went through about Benghazi a closed-door hearing? I thought that was 11 hours, and we all got to watch it on TV, so it wasn't closed-door. Tell me, says Ron in Raleigh, is it a prerequisite for all Republicans to be loudmouth lying assholes? I'm asking for a friend. Tell your friend the answer is yes. Because that's they think if they yell really loud, Emery and Marvelline will understand that that it's really important that they tell those lies. And back before the beginning of the program, I had a note from Lady B. And it kind of goes to the heart of some of the things we talk about, because Lady B is perceptive that way. Been thinking about it, and a lot about all the emails I send you, all angry and pessimistic about what's going on in the world and how we seem to be both a victim and the cause of these problems. I guess what upsets me most is that it doesn't have to be this way. There are tried and true methods on how to run things, who to make friends with, and who to watch your back around. Yet over and over again, we see folks do the exact opposite, people who perpetuate the myth that human lives revolve around money and status and not whether or not we are helpful, decent, and compassionate to one another. It's tiresome, heartbreaking, and depressing. A lot of decent people are cracking under the pressure, with some even ending their lives. Bob, how can we fix this? What can we do to make things better? I'm just a cleaning lady who smokes too much weed and gives too much of a damn. Why do I care so much? And what the hell do we do if this chaos becomes our new way of life? Well, you can get all Faulknerian and say that we will not only survive, we will prevail. That's what Faulkner said when they gave him the Nobel Prize, and he either went over or sent a speech to Scandinavia, to the committee. But it's that thing about saying one thing and doing the opposite. And the fact that it is heartbreaking and depressing. This is Prayer Meeting Wednesday. And that means that we take a look at the comings and goings of the religion industry. And in consequence of that, it's worth pointing out that all the stops are coming out now. Religion is supposed to be, in its best form, which it so seldom is, it is supposed to be calming and soothing. I think Lady B touched on this in another note a couple of nights ago. It is supposed to provide some sort of sense of peace, serenity even. Well, it isn't. And these maniacs are doing everything in their power to terrify their fairly weak-minded following. Sorry. Into doing their bidding. Now, I don't know why these evangelical monsters are so afraid. You know, there was a tepid investigation into their grift and their graft and their corruption, led by Chuck Grassley, who couldn't see his way clear to do the right thing. And so they skated on it. But, for instance, Paula White, who used the most holy day on the Jewish religious calendar to fundraise for herself, Yom Kippur. Well, she went on Jim Baker's Bucket Puddin' Hour, and in something that echoes what went on here in, well, went on in West Virginia and Arkansas in 2000. The RNC sent out mailers saying Al Gore was going to get everybody's Bibles. I think the graphic on it had a knife stabbed into a Bible, and it was sent only to people in West Virginia and Arkansas, letting you know what the RNC thinks about people in West Virginia and Arkansas. Well, it's been recycled.
We were left 170 lower court appointees. Now, you want to talk about affecting your everyday life. President Trump immediately went to work with his legal counsel, put the best legal counsel together to be able to push through these lower courts in your 9th, in your 11th district. So, Jim, we look at what we...
Your 9th, your 11th district? Ma'am, the districts are named after the states. The Eastern District, the Southern District of New York, the Northern District of Alabama, the Southern District of West Virginia. There's no 9th or 11th district. She doesn't even know what she's talking about, but she's sitting there shitting all over our rules that say that politicians or that preachers, gospel sharps, are more than welcome to scam as much of the commons out of our body politic and into their filthy pockets, and all they have to do is not engage in the filthy business of politics. But this woman doesn't know dick about the court system, but she's sitting there speaking ever so earnestly to Jim Baker about judges and about the experts that Trump himself pulled together to choose judges. Well, Trump can't pull together his own goddamn shoelaces. The Heritage Foundation was just sitting around waiting for a useful idiot like Trump to come along and do their bidding. And wait until you hear where she goes with it. Oh, my sweet bleeding Jesus.
Fighting before it went up to the Supreme Court, right? Where are we fighting? Right. In those courts.
That's right.
And people can say, but there are a lot of judges that are supposed to be held to the letter of the law, but are biased.
That's right.
And do not, and
taking
a lot
the power
of
from the president.
Absolutely.
In a lower court. It's not right, people.
No.
In America, we're going to lose.
There's that leading light of jurisprudence Counselor Oliver Wendell Baker.
Freedom of America soon, if we don't. This election is so important.
It's vital.
It just scares me what is going on.
Two Supreme Court justices?
Yes.
We already know. It is potential. We know we'll have a third one. Mm-hmm. We didn't need the time. Yeah. But it is very potential that we could have a fourth or even a fifth. Now, that makes, let me tell you what that makes some people do. That's going to make, it is a dividing line. Mm-hmm. And let you have eyes to see. Because it's going to either make you stand and have to look in your word and say, what does the word of God say and where do I line up? Where do I line up on policy? I might not like the personality. I might not understand him. Get my book and you'll understand.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, get her book. Get her fucking book. Because there's always a book or a bucket of pudding mix. Yeah. But you're supposed to look in your Bible for answers to 21st century questions as given by people from the Bronze Age who didn't know why it rained. Hydrologic cycle? No, it ain't in there. Is it Kings or Chronicles? I think it's Kings in the Old Testament that gives the value of pi as 3.
The personality, and you'll understand
yes.
The person.
This is why those people didn't leave behind any fantastic pyramids or anything. Your pyramid building is going to be severely constrained if you're running around trying to build them and you think pi equals 3.
Okay, yes. Not just the persona.
That's right.
But where do I line up? And you're going to have to make a decision that won't be just held accountable here for how things turn out for you, your children, your grandchildren. But you're going to have to stand accountable before God one day.
Oh, wait a minute. We've got a cowbell for Brother Deacon Asa. Try not to be so chintzy with the cowbells, Todd. She pulls tax-free money from the commons and she can't shut up about politics. Can we say she's got the, wait for it, grift of gab? Why, yes, we can. And that's a double cowbell because there's a pun involved.
Not based on your opinion, your hurt, your wounding, what you think, what you don't. Educate yourself. Know the issues. Know the Word of God. And then if you cannot align with the Word of God, I don't see it. So if we can change the Supreme Court, like we are already changing it,
yes.
And we can, these are lifetime appointments. You don't think...
Send $30 now or more. You'll get the Something Greater Bundle, book by Paula White, and a 3-DVD set. Go to Jim. Holy. It's right. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you. Lee in New York, when I mentioned Mo Brooks representing my hometown in Alabama. Lee says, isn't it obvious what happened? You moved away. The average IQ dropped. Well, bless your heart. Thank you very kindly. That's just downright nice. Apparently a bunch of us moved away. Best legal counsel. Steve in New York says, Jay Sekulow, Rudy Giuliani, simply the best. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's Paula White, right. Steve adds, the Brooks Brothers Brigade 2.0, I take comfort in the fact that they're losing their shizzle because they're scared out of their lizard-brained minds. And they're scared out of their lizard-brained minds because, well, their master is scared out of his spirochete-infested thin gray settlings. To use mind and Donald Trump in the same breath is to, deeply disparage the idea of the human mind as curated by our... most of our big primate brains. And a reminder about the phones. I have not sorted this problem out. I tried earlier today. The only way of getting into the program is via Skype. The only way of making a call to the program is via Skype. Or perhaps you can try the 304-574-8178. but it doesn't seem to have been working properly lately, and I don't know why. But I can't get the Bluetooth to connect from the iPhone over to the Gizmo device. But let's finish up with Paula White, because there's an overarching theme I want to work here for this prayer meeting Wednesday.
All hell is trembling right now.
Oh, yeah.
Because I have a one-year-old grandson, a three-year-old granddaughter. Mm. I thank goodness for DeSantis, who was our governor. We don't deal with core curriculum. But I can tell you things right now.
Yeah, we don't deal with core curriculum. We don't deal with kids actually learning things that they damned well need to know. Oh, hell no. And thank God for Ron DeSantis, who was propelled into office by Nazis and Klansmen. They made up his margin for him. And thank God for Ron DeSantis, Ron Monkey Up DeSantis, who palled around with Lev and Igor. But here's what's coming. Hockey puck.
In certain states, they've already passed legislation in states that says the Bible is a book of hate speech.
No, they haven't. That's just a lie. There is not a single piece of legislation in a single state in the entire United States of America that says the Bible is a book of hate speech. She is a liar. If that great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky really existed, there would have been a lightning bolt and pfft, and nothing but, you know, a greasy spot and a little bit of smoke left where Paula White was sitting. She is literally bearing false witness. She is literally violating the commandment, one of the commandments she thinks needs to hang all over God's green creation.
It is only a matter of time. Those laws are already passed because people are asleep, in my opinion.
Yes. Do you think this next election could change America forever if it goes the wrong way?
Oh, no doubt about it.
Well, that much is true. This next election will change America forever the wrong way if Donald Trump remains the president of the United States. We've got a puncher's chance of correcting some of the more overt problems that have been exposed in these last not quite 3 years. We have no chance at all if it goes on for eight. It'll be past fixing. It'll make the reign of Commodus look like a comedy. There'll be no getting over it. But, so, you know, for the people who sit there and eat their free little plate of bucket supper, and who actually believe Jim Baker when he speaks, well, they got to go out and vote for Donald Trump so that the jackbooted thugs won't come in and put their jackbooted jackboots down on their freedom-loving necks right next to the tattoo that says only God can love me and carry out all their hate speech Bibles. Yeah, I know. I do it with the stupid dialect. And it sounds absolutely insane to listen to this filth. But I promise you, there really are people in this country who believe this shit, and they're standing right next to you at the Wiggly Pig, you know, buying up a box of stovetop and some ramen, you know, the 19 cents a package ramen. They don't wear signs, and you got to pay attention. And if you do, the truth of what I'm saying will come through. And they can, and in a razor-thin margin election, they can make the difference. They and the Nazis and the Klansmen made the difference, and that's why Andrew Gillum isn't governor of Florida. And instead, a guy who pals around with crooks is. This shit is real. And it's almost like they're on message. Because, for instance, enter Rick Wiles. They're already contemplating the fact that Donald Trump may exit the White House before his first term is over. And Rick Wiles is trying to get the brown shirts organized.
If they take him out, there's going to be violence in America. That's all there is to it.
And when we say take him out...
However he leaves, there's going to be violence in America. And I believe there are people in this country, veterans, there are cowboys, mountain men, I mean guys that know how to fight.
Mountain men? What, Jeremiah Johnson? Jesse Chisholm? The Revenant? Mountain men? Cowboys? Has Rick Wiles been tapping into the sacramental wine and late at night watching a few too many old Village People videos? And he didn't say anything about the Indians. Construction workers? Really buff cops?
And they're going to make a decision that the people that did this to Donald Trump are not going to get away from it, with it. And they're going to hunt him down.
Now, he gets to hide behind the lace skirting of the First Amendment saying this, but this is stochastic terrorism. I hope you understand. Now, Emery and Marvelline are not going to be very... you're not going to be able to count on them to go out and start squeezing off a round or two or sending pipe bombs to Democratic members of Congress. But that's the thing about stochastic terrorism. You just put it out there and you wait for it to filter down into the right or wrong, as the case may be, minds. Because make no mistake, Rick Wiles wants that. Steve in New York says, however he leaves, that sounds an awful lot like even in an election. This looks like an open endorsement of dictatorship right there in plain sight. It is. However he leaves, if he loses, Rick Wiles wants people to take their guns and start killing the people that they could not beat at the ballot box. In other words, to abandon the ballot box in favor of the ammunition box. And because of our fetishized vision of the First Amendment, he can do this every day, all day, every day, and twice on Sunday.
I'm serious. They're going to hunt him down. I don't want it to happen. I don't want to see the country go this way. But once hell breaks loose,
bullshit, he doesn't want to see it happen. He yearns for it. And he's using stochastic terrorism as a means of trying to reach not people who follow him, people who don't, whom he can terrorize. In an enlightened polity, this guy would be behind bars. Because you cannot advocate civil war, or you should not be able to advocate civil war and engage in overt stochastic terrorism and get a pass.
If these people in Washington think that they're going to get away with it, it's not going to happen. The Trump supporters are going to hunt them down. It's going to happen. And this country is going to be plunged into darkness.
You know, notice the language he uses, get away with it. Well, that's the problem. Donald Trump has been getting away with it all his life. And he's trying to do in the White House the same thing he's done with his shady-ass business all of his misbegotten days. He is the guy who always gets away with it. And there's finally someone out there, or a group of people out there, who are determined to put an end to it. And Rick Wiles has said plainly, he wants them killed. And yet the Secret Service, nor the FBI, neither of them will ever show up to even ask him what he meant. And the statutes that would be used to put you, me, anyone else who said anything similar in jail will never be used against him. Subject line, Mountain Man. Irwin says, I'm going to order some buckskins from Amazon and join up. A Montana Mountain Man. Maybe I can become a general. Ooh. Well, I think all you have to do is to start calling yourself General Irwin, and you'll be right there, because it's not like there's a lot of formal structure.
And they brought it upon themselves, because it won't back off. It just won't back off. They won't.
Yeah, they won't stop calling out the criminality that the president of the United States keeps going in front of cameras and confessing.
Let the people express their views. They voted for Donald Trump. They wanted Donald Trump. But they said, no, you're stupid. You're ignorant. You're racist. You're bigots.
Because they are.
We're not going to allow your vote to count.
No, your vote counted. It's just that you pulled up 3 million short. And the only reason Donald Trump became president is because of operation of an anachronism left over from the days when we were trying to pull together a constitution that we could get ratified by all the states involved. And that meant placating and appeasing the filthy slavers. Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Maryland, Delaware. He doesn't want maggots' votes to one person, one vote, no. He wants maggot votes to be special. Maggot vote plus asterisk, and the asterisk means Jeebus or something.
And they've waged war against those people now for 3 years, calling them every name that you can. Those people are fed up with it, Doc.
Yeah, well, it's not name-calling. When a racist engages in racism, and you say that they're racist, that's not name-calling. That's reporting. That's an adjective. Or an adverb. Or a gerund. All kinds of different things in English. When Nazis march in Charlottesville, and they chant over and over again, Jews will not replace us, it's not name-calling to say that they're Nazis. Because Nazis do that. It's not name-calling to say that they're anti-Semites, because anti-Semites do that. And you might recall, Rick Wiles is a notorious anti-Semite. Remember, Hebrew isn't even a real language? We had that one a few weeks back.
They're fed up with it, and they know. If they get away with this, there's no country left. It's done. It's finished. So, what does Gerald Celente say?
When people, who the hell's he?
Have lost everything.
They have nothing to lose.
They lose everything. They just lose it. All right? They're going to go on a rampage. And you're not going to be able to put it back in the bottle. it's going to be turned loose.
Well, that's what the Confederates said, too. Maybe we haven't put it all in back in the bottle, but obviously we haven't, because, well, consider that county commission meeting in Sevier County, Tennessee. Hoo-wee, Sevier County, Tennessee is having a rough couple of days. There's not a business that's on Yelp or TripAdvisor or whatever in Sevier County, Tennessee that hasn't been, felt the, after effects of Commissioner Warren Hurst's filthy diatribe of a couple of nights ago in a county commission meeting. Dollywood has had a near 24/7 job on its hands of removing negative comments. And you know, there's an easy way to get around that. Step out into the public square and plainly and clearly state, that Warren Hurst's bigoted statements are not your own, and that you demand that Warren Hurst step down from the Sevier County Commission. Plain and simple. So it's Rick Wiles. So it's Paula White. And it's also a wingnut yacker by the name of Eric Metaxas. It's almost like they've received talking points from somewhere. I mean, isn't it interesting that all this shit is flowing out into the national conversation, the national consciousness, and then today you get this Brooks Brothers 2.0.
People often ask the question, and I've written a book about it on Bonhoeffer, but how did the 30s, how did the Nazis take over Germany? How
propaganda.
Did it happen? How did it happen that the Salem witch trials? How do people get crazy and there's this mass, lemming-like run towards something that's a chimera, an illusion, and yet it happens over and over in history.
Right.
And I agree with you in the thesis of your book that there's no doubt that that is what has just happened. And it's actually, of course, not over yet. We still have people who, the moment the Mueller report came out, they kept grasping at straws, when there were no longer straws to grasp.
Obviously, this is another human being who never read the Mueller report. I mean, I don't have to go over this again, but just for the sake of accuracy, Bob Mueller said he was taking a dive at the very beginning. He said he couldn't charge the president with anything, so he wasn't going to talk about whether the president was actually guilty of anything. And then proceeded to lay out no less than 10 instances where the fact pattern suggests that Donald Trump had engaged in obstruction of justice, among other things.
You know, they leapt over to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. They really don't stop. And I want
to
say,
that's because there's a next thing to move on to. And after that, there's another next thing to move on to. And after that, another next thing to move on to, because this administration will not stop engaging in overtly criminal conduct. Good Christ. I'm over halfway through the program, and I haven't gotten to the fact that we found out in the last couple of days that they did the same thing with money for Puerto Rico that they did with Ukraine. And I made a prediction earlier today on social media that eventually we're going to find out that the goal was to take all this money that they wanted to withhold and put it into the stupid fucking wall. Because he has an obsession with that stupid goddamn wall. But yeah, in order to qualify for more aid, Puerto Rico had to be given notice of a filing deadline through DHHR, and seven states were given that filing deadline, but they conveniently left Puerto Rico off the list, so Puerto Rico didn't know it was on notice, and therefore Puerto Rico could not qualify for literally billions of dollars in hurricane relief through DHHR. And this was admitted in one of those congressional hearings that we weren't watching because we were so busy watching the overt criminality of Donald J. Trump on display in other fora.
Really bluntly to my audience, you don't have to like Trump. In fact, you can hate Trump. That's your right as an American. But
well, thank you.
When we see this level of corruption happening in our government, when we see...
Who's corruption? I mean, when you're going to predicate a sentence with something like that, we're seeing the corruption, and there are a few hardy souls who are trying to deal with it. But no, according to this goob, the corruption lies in investigating the criminality.
Journalists abdicate their sacred calling as journalists to follow a narrative. I have to say, every American should be scared, because if you do not undo this, if you don't wake up from the dream, it's the end of America.
So it's the end of America for investigating impeachable conduct by a president of the United States. Now, this Eric Metaxas looks like, you know, he's been on the planet for a little bit. I mean, he's got salt and pepper, gray hair. So I'm guessing he was among the conscious back in 1999. And if you go back to 1999, you will not find any audio of Eric Metaxas declaring that this is the end of America if we don't stop investigating Bill Clinton getting a Hummer. Similarly, you will not find any audio of Eric Metaxas saying that it's the end of America if we don't stop talking about George Bush launching an illegal war based on lies that killed a million innocent civilians. Why? Well, the simple answer is that he's a goddamned hypocrite. He's an evangelical Christian. Lying and hypocrisy are their stock in trade. But the larger point with all of this lies in the fact that here you got Paula White, Jim Baker, Eric Metaxas, Rick Wiles, and none of those people are intelligent enough to come up with a coordinated talking point campaign on their own. This is coordinated. And it's also, to a certain extent, a mark of desperation. When they're telling their mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers to go get their goons, because the Democrats is going to take away their Bibles, or America's just going to die, because the Congress is looking into a shakedown scheme, they know better than any of us how much criminality and how much overt crookedness is involved. But baby, they're right there with him. They got their front feet in the trough with Trump, and they're about a half an inch away from having all four trotters in there at once. And that is some fine slop they're in. And they're going to stick their snouts in there and gobble till they can barely move on their ham. I know, Ron. I need some relief, Ron says. These fucking people piss me off so bad. They don't give a damn about how you want to live your life. They want you to live your life the way they want you to. A Handmaid's Tale is a how-to book for these motherfuckers. They really are a truly dangerous bunch. They spew all this bullshit while they have threesomes with the pool boy and party at the wall in South Beach. That they do. Ron continuing, but you heard Commissioner Hurst say he's not prejudiced. I'm confused, because if he's not a racist, then who is? Well, see, you have to. You're only a racist if you say racist things and you don't have some black friends. That's how that works. But there is a bunch of this shit. It's all over the place. Apparently, what is happening in terms of just investigating criminal conduct, according to Seb Gorka, you know, the guy who had to leave the regime because he got caught wearing paraphernalia associated with the Nazi movement in what, Hungary?
But the point is that what we've seen is an intelligence operation, a permanent group of people that work in that have worked in the government for decades, that are undermining the duly elected president.
Now, whoever this little dude is with the voice made for print, this is what passes for professional broadcasting over at that website and, you know, massive fraud scheme. That rhymes with light and fart. And he's pontificating in advance of putting some sort of a question to Seb Gorka. You know, I've heard that if you go to the clinic and you get a shot of about 1 million units of penicillin, you can make your Gorka stop sebbing.
They're doing what they can, sharing information, so on and so forth, to try to essentially nullify the election. And now that's the latest development of that.
And that really does wear me out. Oh, we're going to nullify the election. You mean the one he lost? Or trying to take away the votes of the maggots. How can you take votes away when he didn't have a majority in the first place? Oh, illegal voters in a bus going to New Hampshire.
Is that it's been iterated in the development of impeachment proceedings by the Democrats against President Trump. But this has been a nonstop battle between the two sides.
Right. So what I explain in the book is first.
Yes, first. He has a book to hustle first.
I tell a personal story about what happened to me at my daughter's college graduation earlier this
year. Oh, my goodness gracious. Did someone bring him a cold cup of coffee?
This year, just to illustrate the level of indoctrination in this country. So that's how it opens. Then I move to this topic exactly, and I call it Obamagate. This isn't, you know, FISA-gate. This isn't Russia-gate. I call this Obamagate because there's...
I can't wait for the because part. Because tan suits...
There's no way that the counterintelligence operation Crossfire Hurricane, which was launched by John Brennan and by James Comey, did not occur without the acquiescence, without the green light being given by the last president.
Actually, Seb, that it's entirely likely because prior to the arrival of Nitwit Nero in the White House, presidents, generally speaking, shied away from giving express orders to the intelligence community because there was supposed to be a certain amount of independence in their ability to act so that they would be able to actually do their jobs. He sounds like Stewie after his balls dropped.
And I rely heavily upon the incredible work by people like John Solomon, Sarah Carter, Dan Bongino, Greg Jarrett, who've documented what happened. And, you know, Watergate was a bungled burglary that the president and his team tried to cover up. Obamagate makes Watergate look like a non-event.
Oh, yes, of course, except for the fact that there is no Obamagate. It exists only in the fettered imaginings of a Nazi sympathizer by the name of Seb Gorka. I share this stuff because we have to know what their theories and their tactics are if we're going to appropriately oppose them. We have to be able to peel them like grapes if we're ever going to stomp them, metaphorically and figuratively, of course. Wait a minute. Cowbell for Steve in New York. Urethra, I found it. Gorka is Stewie. Yeah, he is. I bet he called his mother, woman. We're up to our, it's prayer meeting Wednesday, and we are up to our necks in this filth. And again, let me reiterate, there's only one way to get into the program because I can't seem to make the gizmo that brings the stress line online. I'm still working on it. I hope it's not just dead, but that's the situation as it presently exists. Jim has been asking me to do, and I don't completely understand. He wants me to make a verbal correction, and I don't. I've got a. Okay, the 10. Okay, there it is. I'm sorry. I had to go back through about 100 emails. The 10 was in the Lords of Discipline. Okay, no worries, Jim. It's not a problem. Not a problem at all. And, because I know Jim's experience at the Citadel was a brutal one. Sorry about that, Jim. What's that, Brother Deacon Asa? Trump Wiles 2020. Too bright to fail. Jesus. My periodic request coming from Steve in New York. Is this really happening? Am I the only one waiting for Alan Funt to jump out from somewhere to tell us we're on candid camera? Oh, it's really happening. And the only people that's going to jump out from behind anything in 2019 are people carrying AR-15s wearing maggot hats. And that's not a good thing. All right, let's run over and let's check in with Todd. What do you say? Sounds like a good idea. Hey, Todd. Todd hung up. Right as I was about to... You'll have that. So now let's move on over to... Oh, wait, is Todd back? Man, Todd, you got to have a little faith. I'll get there. Todd.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you are.
I'm here.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure because, you know, you were having phone issues.
No, the phone issues are only with the stress line.
I see. Okay. I must have missed that part. Wow. Look, man. It is so, like you said, it's so much, but that was a great filibuster. And, you know, I'm glad I wasn't the only one thinking about the compromised phones going into the SCIF. I mean, that's just outrageous. Because who knows how many of those folks are on the take with Russia. If you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do.
And, no, it's not cool. And then when you, like, combine that with... the GOP and the spy that we have in custody, Putina, and the NRA, and it's just a little bit too much. But It brings me to projection, because I was listening to your quotes from the Wiles fellow and Gorka and the other people you played. And if you just do like a Mad Libs kind of exercise, it's like they're talking about themselves.
Yeah, everything they're rampant illegality. Well, yeah.
The coup, right? These people are involved in the coup. It's just uncanny. It's almost too much to digest, you know. I don't know.
It beggars the intellect. It beggars the imagination, and it beggars expression. There's not anybody listening to this program, regardless of age, from the youngest to the oldest, who ever thought we would be living through this. But by the same token, we all should probably have expected this, because it's a trajectory, Todd. It is a linear progression. This isn't some random data point plucked out of a spider web woven across the front porch of our body politic. This is if A, then B, if A and B, then C kind of stuff.
But we never thought we'd see C.
Why?
I mean, it was out there, maybe it would happen, but it's happened. It's here.
Yeah. And the only solace I can take in this is something that Steve pointed out a few minutes ago. He said, I like what Mike Malloy says about Trump's minions. They're brain-dead cowards, no more likely to take up arms and take to the streets than they are to start going to the gym to work out. And I would say, and I would say for the most part, that's true. But the aim of stochastic terrorism, like what these people are engaging in, is not to get everybody into the streets for no. And they know that there is no realistic likelihood that the mountain men and the cowboys and the really buff cops and the Indian and the construction worker and the biker guy, they're not going to go out and overturn the government. What these people are doing is trying to radicalize and weaponize random individuals to keep the blood flowing in America. And I don't mean like through healthy circulation and cutting down on the fats in your diet. I mean the rivers of blood that are flowing through Walmarts and streets in Dayton and nightclubs in Orlando.
Right, like the pipe bomber with the white van.
Yeah, him too.
All it takes is a few. And see, this is dangerous. Well, we've been in dangerous territory. But, you know, I agree with you. And, you know, once again, you know, Washington Journal, when you hear regular people call in, and they're convinced it's the deep state. You know, everyone's against this mentally ill fascist who's stupid on top of everything else, you know, just for no reason. They don't understand it. They don't even understand this process, because their leaders keep saying, well, it's not fair. We can't hear the witnesses. They don't understand that, well, that will be like giving you discovery before it's ready.
But hold the hell on, Todd. They're hearing the witnesses. They're in the room. It's just that the hardcore crazy ass maggots aren't.
Right. But they don't understand that. Their leaders are lying to them. Because, you know, some certain people in the GOP, they're lying. Just like in Washington, well, on C-SPAN, after Washington Journal is over, and at different parts of the program, they will interview, like today, some representatives and senators. Okay, and they are towing the line. They had this gentleman on from Tennessee,
He said, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a learned man, but it just ain't right. People know when things ain't right. I think his name is Burchett or Burkett, something of that nature. It's on there. And he is toeing the line. And he said, I don't understand why. You know, it's a lie. Of course the Republicans in there. And then he asked earlier in the, well, yesterday they asked the Republicans. Well, the moderator said, well, were you, because you're on one of those committees. First of all, you're supposed to be on the committee to even be in the room. That's number one. So anything else, you're pushing the law. But so he didn't even go. And he was eligible. He said, no, I had things to do. I just had my daughter had a grandbaby, blah, blah, blah. Which, you know, fine. That's true. That's a good excuse. But, yeah, they're just being misled. It's just really sad.
Hold on. I don't want to give them that much of a pass.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they are being misled. But they are being misled, Todd, because they are willing to be misled. We can attribute some of this to things like failures to teach critical thinking. But mm-hmm. with a whole bunch of these maggots, they're all just out there singing a rousing chorus of tell me lies, tell me sweet little lies, tell me lies. Okay? They mm-hmm. want to be lied to because they are more invested in their racism, in their bigotry, in their ignorance, and particularly in their authoritarianism. You can have a maggot who's not a racist. You can have a maggot who's not a homophobe. You can have maggots who aren't anti-Semitic, Nazis, Klansmen. You know, not all maggots. But the one thing they all are, Todd, is authoritarians. And they yearn for the validation of whatever it is that they are, that the authoritarianism of the maggot nation provides to them.
I agree. I absolutely agree. And it's a simple, people can do what they want, think the way they want to think if they understand what they're thinking. Because that's the easy way out, is to be authoritarian and either a full-out fascist or fascisto-like. Because it's easy. All you do is fall in line and do what you're told. It's very easy. At the same time, they profess that they have freedom. You know, it's like when you try to listen to Rush Limbaugh, you know, which I try to do occasionally, but he's so far out there. He's just crazy. But these people follow him. That's why they say, why are you trying to, get my president out of office? He's my president. You know, these people, it's the great white hope. That's why they don't have a problem with Russia. Because deep down, they know what Russia is. That's the real white folks. Caucasian, you know, like the mountain range. Over there, they know that, you know, right. That's really what it boils down to. They know that's the great white hope. They know that they don't like abortion because it's not enough white babies, and they know that those Supreme Court justices will give them what they want. And it's just a real mess. I mean, how can you say you believe in God and Jesus and you're doing all these foul things? Explain that.
Well, they've got an explanation for it. The explanation, Todd, is that we didn't elect him because he's perfect. God doesn't. God ain't nobody's perfect. God uses the tools that is available to him, and he may not be perfect. He ain't a perfect vessel, but he is forgiven, and God is using him for his purposes, which are far too mysterious for any of us to understand.
Oh, they're mysterious, all right. Mysterious and hard to find, like his intellect. You know, it's nowhere to be found. It's just, this stuff is breathtaking at this point. But the level of projection, even with 45 Son saying, you know, these people may want to come to Washington just to get rich. And how do they even get off on this shit with bringing up, granted, all right, this thing with Biden and his son, it's unsavory, it happens all the time. That's just what happens. If you have the right name, you know, that's what happens. But why in the world would they feel comfortable bringing that up when they have all these unqualified
direct kin of the miscreant taking care of government business, and they can't even pass a security check or a background check. Why would they even breathe those words?
I hate it when you ask those questions that are about halfway rhetorical and otherwise unanswerable.
I just can't understand it. Because that argument, it's like if you were in court and you gave that argument, you know, the lawyer would be like, oh, this is an easy day. This is cake. I just don't understand what is going on. Is this mass hypnosis? You know, because honestly, back to the projection. I mean, come on, all this shit is illegal. If you just say I'm not gonna respond, and none of my staff will respond to any subpoenas, no, fuck that. We're not doing it. That's illegal.
Yeah, it
is. Go straight to jail. Fuck that. People have had enough of this.
But it's been breaking down for a while, Todd. I think we need to be clear about that. We thought we had a definitive answer where things like presidential subpoenas were concerned after Watergate. But it turns out that every president seeks to one degree or another to expand executive power, and it usually comes at the expense of the powers of the other two branches of government. At the general expense of constitutional governance generally.
Mm-hmm.
And so we thought we had the presidential subpoena question answered as of Watergate, but then along comes, in the middle of it, you know, there's Reagan and Iran-Contra.
Right.
Where there was smoke pouring out of shredding machines.
Mm-hmm.
There was then the Clinton matter, and they just responded, but they did litigate it. And among other things, George Conway was one of the lawyers who was particularly responsible for the idea that you can depose a sitting president. And working for Ken Starr at the time, an eager young beer drinker by the name of Brett Kavanaugh, wrote a memo saying that they should be able to ask in specific detail about every filthy thing they could imagine. Well, sir, if we said that you flung your used condom against the American flag, sir, would that be untrue? Well, that'd be untrue. Well, all right, sir, if we said that you emptied your used condom on the passage in the book of Luke in the Bible in the Oval Office that talks about the conception of Christ in the Virgin Mary. Would that be untrue? Oh, that'd be untrue, too. Are you sure, sir? You're under oath. And they wanted, Brett Kavanaugh was central to that line of argument. Well, then a few more years pass, and lo and behold, he's in the White House working for Dim Leader. And Dim Leader is about in some shit over both 9/11. Remember, he couldn't even talk to the 9/11 Commission without sitting on Count Dicula's lap. And he most assuredly could not be put under oath. Remember?
Yep.
And then there was the fact that he started an illegal war based on a tissue paper thin a passel of lies that got a million people dead. And there were people who were actually thinking, we might need to impeach this motherfucker if we ever actually got congressional power to do it. And along the way, there's Brett Kavanaugh still probably going to baseball games and whatnot that nobody still knows how he paid for the tickets for. When did the Nationals move to D.C.? I can't remember.
Well, I have no idea.
He's probably going to O's games back then. Camden Yards, great place to watch ball games.
Oh, yeah.
Great place to watch a ball game if only there was a decent baseball team playing in it most of the time. But he suddenly, having been full of of the crusaders' zeal to go after Bill Clinton suddenly rethinks his position. You know, he talked about this in some portion of his confirmation. You know, I realized I was probably a little hasty in my opinion that I earlier espoused, and I realized that it probably would be better if we just said that you can't subpoena presidents and you can't ask them for documents and no, you can't do that kind of stuff. And that is what got him the nomination.
Well, see, the combination of all these things that we're talking about, including Attorney General Barr with his hesitation about, you know, what would you do about foreign influence in an election. And he had to pause. He just couldn't say, oh, that's terrible. No, we can't do that. He didn't say that. He had to say, well, I have to look at the case, or, you know, it depends. And here we are. Now we're presented with this, and he won't recuse himself. See, so the elasticity, what
I was getting at is that, I was saying earlier, this is part of a linear process. It is also, however, a part of a setup. So that...
Where
in 1999, Lindsey Graham can say, while refusing to honor a subpoena is automatically impeachable. Well, now it's not.
It's
so bad that the Washington Post aimed an op-ed directly at Lindsey Graham today and schooled him on shit that he should have learned in 1L.
From the law, he's just trying to make Trump look good. Come on, he has to know better than the stuff he's saying. Talking about Lindsey,
I don't know because again, it may be one of those talking point thingies, but I'm hearing more and more of these Republican members of Congress say, "Well, where's the evidence of a crime?" And the first person I heard say that was Precious Lindsey. It is as though they have no comprehension of the Constitution they swore to uphold and protect and defend. Because if you swear that oath and you have no idea what's going on in the document, how are you ever supposed to preserve it or defend it or protect it?
Well, that's another one. That's another article. I know you're getting to a point, and you got. I mean, right? But see. Trump swore to uphold something he knows nothing about. He knows nothing about the Constitution.
Oh, sure, I put my hand on a Bible, but I had the other hand in the air, but I had my toes crossed.
You know, stop it. But this is what bothers me about just having one article. I mean, they talked about an article with an umbrella and all these other things under it. But it only takes one article of impeachment. So you have to have at least, three or four. So what if you get a strike a few times? We've got to have at least one that hits. You can't put all your marbles in one bank. You can't do it. But all right, so seriously, and this ties into what we're talking about, I think. I was able to listen to Dr. O'Brien earlier.
Yeah, wasn't he on fire today?
Oh, I picked the right day. Oh my God! So, and I didn't get all.
Oh no, you need to go back for Monday too.
Monday also. Okay.
Yeah, he wasn't here yet. He wasn't here yesterday. He had to take his dog to the vet. But Monday, at my request, he took a deep dive into the emoluments clause.
Well, I bet that. Yeah, I have to listen to that. But I like the point that he brought up about the genius of Madison. Where Madison penned an editorial in the paper, so where he took both sides of an argument, like a Republican side and the other side. Well, you know, Republican was different then. But so basically, you know what I'm saying. He boiled it down to the point where, you know, if the population is not up to par with the facts and what's going on, even if they're intellectually challenged, there's a way to explain things. And the onus should be on the government to make sure the population is well versed on how decisions are being made in the process. Otherwise, people don't even know what they're, as opposed to the other side would say, well, you know, the people, you know, if you're well off enough, you can get an education, you figure it out. And then, you know, you can see there's two ways this is the track you take. And it looks like we're on the wrong track. They've taken civics out of school.
I sometimes wonder if there were so many inherent flaws in the structure that they put together that sooner or later this wasn't bound to happen. They had, a genius like Madison had to know that. Madison was the second most, up until the, at the point that he completed his education, he was the second most brilliant man ever to graduate from Princeton. The most brilliant man to ever graduate from Princeton was Aaron Burr. Truly, I mean, it's not arguable. Madison was second. And so he thought about things, as Dr. Bill was pointing out, in great detail and seems rather self-contradictory. But that is because of the evolution of his thinking. One of the things that I heard Dr. Bill say today that sort of grabbed me by my pink little ears was that he was decidedly against slavery and yet was a slave owner.
Mm-hmm.
And that the degree of cognitive dissonance that would have to exist inside one's mind would be mind breaking. But in Madison's Madison's case, he plows through, and for instance, was the author of a system that said nobody gets to vote who doesn't own property.
Right.
And by the time he's getting older, he's saying, listen, if we don't include everybody in this, or at least every white male, property or no property, this whole thing's going to collapse.
Yep.
And when he was saying that kind of thing, make no mistake, there were howls of outrage at what he was saying. And then not too long after, Jackson comes along and says, listen, Jackson was known as not just a slaver, but a particularly vicious one. And even Jackson is saying, if we don't get rid of the Electoral College, it's going to hurt us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in the first third of the 19th century. It's this ongoing failure to act that has proven to be the hobgoblin of our attempt at self-governance.
Wow, now you said a mouthful there. Think how many instances your statement is applicable to and toward. All these speed bumps, and we neglect to fix the road. And that's speed bumps, potholes, it say. And we keep neglecting to fix the road. Just like, okay, psychology is a rather new, neuroscience is new. Let's put it like that. You know, it used to be psychology, now it's saying neuroscience because it's a science. You know, there, people were still using phrenology. They were just reading bumps on people's heads when they were working on the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, you know, if they were doing that. But it has to be updated for mental illness now. I mean, it's a real thing. You know, if somebody can check your blood pressure and your temperature, you know, maybe you should be evaluated. We have the technology to evaluate someone. And put them through the MRI and say, hey, you know, your brain is really, your cerebrum is not looking too good here. We have to do further tests. You know, you can just flip out any minute. You know, your limbic system is compromised, which means you can just get emotional over anything. But you know, it's just, you're right. But that's tricky stuff. Because then they'll want to do a convention, you know, a constitutional convention. And that's risky business.
Oh, it was risky enough business with geniuses like Madison and Franklin involved. Can you imagine? I mean, just try if you can avoid being plunged into just endless sobbing and screaming. Try to imagine a constitutional convention with Mo Brooks in it, with Louis Gohmert in it, with Matt Gaetz in it.
We wouldn't have a union. If we had to start over, it would just be regional. I don't think we'd have a union. What do you think?
There are predictions out there that this country will eventually balkanize.
Mm-hmm.
The devil is in the details. It's hard to imagine it not happening without significant structural changes. I caught one guy in my filthy morning habit today, a thinker of sorts. He was counsel to one of the committees in the Congress. I mean, he's written books. And he's talking about solving the subpoena problem. He said, mm-hmm. we simply need a statute that said in cases of congressional subpoenas, all appeals, they're not even going to fool with the district court. They're going to go straight to the D.C. circuit or straight to the circuit courts. The circuit court has 30 days to decide it. And then if they decide it and whoever decides to take it to the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court has 30 days to decide it so that you're outside of a process of more than, I mean, at that point, you've got a manageable process of no more than 60 days or so.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was rather mm-hmm. elegant thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had to write this at some point.
Yeah, but the problem is we're going to have a list as long as our arms and trying to deal with it all in, say, one Congress, functionally impossible. Unless you've got a president who's in accord with both houses of Congress, and both houses of Congress have significant enough majorities to make the other side shut the fuck up. And the number of times, and this is a theme I've returned to again and again, the number of times that has happened, well, they're rare. Important things and beneficial things tend to happen in those moments. But two of them off the top of my head, the Congress of the United States, when it didn't have its southern component during the years of the Civil War, when the South mm-hmm. walked out of the Congress by mm-hmm. virtue of secession. A lot of forward thinking, good things were done then. The other thing, that comes to mind is that is the Congress and FDR.
Mm.
Things happened in that brief window of opportunity that they'd been trying to make happen for years, but which the Republicans had managed to stymie because that's what Republicans do. The massive poverty among our elderly population that was the norm, that was the rule and not the exception prior to Social Security, was just fine by Republicans. They didn't care if poor old people starved to goddamn death. They're Republicans.
No.
And so
they have a fundamental different vision of how the country is supposed to be, and it becomes difficult.
Right, and it is that vision of the country that was put forward by Alexander Hamilton. I'm channeling my inner Dr. Bill now. Alexander Hamilton was a monarchist and a royalist, and he was the head of a faction that said, "Hey, the people who own this country are the people who should rule this country. None of that happy Jeffersonian horse shit about the enlightened yeoman farmer out there tilling his fields and tending to democracy. Fuck all that. If you ain't got no money, you ain't got no say."
Mm-hmm.
And in many ways, those therein lies the economic roots of the Republican Party. If you sodium pentothal'd a bunch of Republicans up and said, "I mean, come on, let's let our hair down." People that don't own property really shouldn't be voting, should they? Well, hell no. If they can't give money to me and they don't have a bunch of property, what the hell do I need to be? What kind of representation do they need?
Right.
You know, they don't need laws to deal with payday lenders or car title company lenders or fentanyl in the weed. Jesus Christ. I saw Agnes pointed that story out to me the other day. And for once in my life, I'm willing to believe that it's not just more scare tactics from a law enforcement agency. This isn't, you know, this is your brain on drugs, frying eggs stuff. There are law enforcement agencies out there freaking the fuck out because there's stuff going around out there that looks like weed that's loaded with fentanyl. And so somebody just gets a bag of black market weed and twists up a number, and the next thing you know, they're fucking dead.
And don't even talk about other stuff that people
But we don't need a government that addresses problems like that. Ask a Republican. We don't need an FDA. We don't need a USDA. We don't need an FCC. We don't need every Republican platform for the last 40 years has included a demand for the end of the Department of Education.
Right. Oh, they love that. They want to get rid of that badly. That's what DeVos's job is. But all right. So this is, and I know maybe I mentioned this before, but it's come to the front again. You know, a couple of years ago, I believe a Chinese firm bought Smithfield. You know, Smithfield.
I remember it well.
It's owned by China, a Chinese firm. Right. Yeah. We all freaked out. I was like, oh my God. So. And a lot of meat goes over to China to get processed and then comes back here because, you know, you're going to pay people virtually nothing. So that is on the heels of the cutting back of the meat inspectors by 40%. And I think it's about that legislation, I think, is about three quarters of the way through. I don't think, unless we act, we don't have too much time on that one. And I just don't understand that in the midst of all these.
Now, I did not know it was coming back from China. I remember all the stories at the time it was going down saying, no, it'll all be processed here and it'll be shipped to China because China loves pork.
Oh, they've been shipping chicken and pork products to China to be, you know, carved up and everything. It's that much cheaper. It's that much cheaper. Is that crazy or what?
But Jesus, it's perishable. So
I know. Well, look, man, they probably have slave labor doing whatever they have to do. You know, these container ships, they must have a way. It scares me. It's frightening. But, you know, it's the haves and the have-nots. And if you don't have, you can be dumb as hell if you have. But, you know, whatever. You think poor people are always stupid. I don't know, man. They have a different vision. I mean, but look, we have whole groups of people who look at the same thing. We all look at the sky and people are seeing different things. Some people think it's blue. Some people think it's polka dot.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the and again, no offense intended. It's the old fable of two blind guys describing an elephant. You get a you've got two people forming an opinion about one thing, and they come up with completely different answers depending where they are on the elephant. Oh, and by the way, I want to bring this out because this is actually kind of important, and it's an issue that we have touched on, and it needs a minute. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I actually sorted out the problem with the stress line, so the stress line's up and running, which is awesome.
Oh, good news, good news.
Yeah. Sometimes the light goes on. So they were having arguments in the Second Circuit Court of Appeals today.
Wait a minute. You don't mean Second District? Wait a minute.
No, I don't mean the Second District. I mean the Second Circuit. Yeah, I'm not Paula White, and I don't have an $8,000 green leather jacket on. So, U.S. Circuit Judge Denny Chin asked Nitwit Nero's lawyer, a guy named William Consovoy, they were arguing the question of immunity, and this is kind of where I was headed when I was talking about the subpoena business and Brett Kavanaugh and all of that. They're arguing whether the president can be is subject to a subpoena, even though these are cases of settled law, but we have to relitigate them based on whether or not the president's a Republican or a Democrat, because I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. And so in the course of the arguments, Judge Chin, sitting there in his courthouse in Manhattan, looks at lawyer Consovoy and asks him, what about the Fifth Avenue example? Because it's just short. It's become shorthand now. It's become cultural shorthand. Donald Trump's claim that he could shoot a person in the middle of Fifth Avenue in New York City and not lose a vote. Now, that was what he was saying at the time, because it was on the campaign trail.
I could shoot somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue and I'd never lose a vote.
Right.
And Consovoy replies, this is not a permanent immunity. And Judge Chin responds, I'm talking about while in office. And Consovoy goes, nope. And Chin said, nothing could be done. That's your position. Consovoy said, that's correct. It's kind of breathtaking. Because what he's saying, what Consovoy is saying there, is that the Office of Legal Counsel guidance that says, as we have, you know, we've reduced it to the absolute absurd here. The Office of Legal Counsel guidance that says that the President of the United States, armed with an AR-15 and a 100-round magazine, could begin spraying bullets around Lafayette Square Park, gunning down American citizens, while being observed by the Secret Service, the FBI, the D.C. Metro Police, and the Capitol Police, and not one of those people could arrest him for murder.
That's what it means.
That's what it means. And he certainly could not be indicted for it while he was in office, thanks to that self-same bullshit OLC guidance. What Consovoy was arguing, however, was an extension of that idea. He's saying that not only, an extension of it, not only can he commit felonies and not be charged, he can't even be investigated. His conduct cannot be investigated.
Well, then we no longer have a functioning republic, if that's the case. Then we're back to monarchy.
Right. Well, the Constitution is in tatters at that point.
Yeah. Forget about it.
And the thing's going to... And here's the fun... This is that tired old saying goes...
That's a dumbass argument, though.
This
that's
is where the rubber meets the road. It's not a dumbass argument if Brett Kavanaugh is waiting for it on the Supreme Court. That is his position, too.
But he said he believed in stare decisis.
Is this where I have to tell you about the Tooth Fairy, Todd? I mean, this is a mind-boggling exchange in
this motherfucker doubled down. He doubled down on that shit?
Yeah. Not only can you not charge him with a crime, you can't investigate him for one. At damn all.
And that's a setup.
And that sets up the issue to go before a court that has a justice on it who agrees with the argument put forward, and don't think for a damn minute that William Consovoy wasn't thinking about exactly that when he made that argument.
Wow.
How's that for putting a little how's that for putting a little starch in your drawers?
Man, that's terrible news. That's terrible news.
And I've got the audio here. I'm trying to see if I can get it to play.
Yeah, I'd like everyone needs to hear that.
It has to.
And what's your view on the Fifth Avenue example? Local authorities couldn't investigate. They couldn't do anything about it.
I think once a president is removed from office, any local authority. This is not a permanent immunity.
Well, I'm talking about while in office.
No.
That's the hypo. Nothing could be done. That's your position.
That is correct. That is correct.
You got it?
Be serious.
Yeah.
Well, I did. That lawyer was what's his name? Soup. Okay, so that's where we are. So
and that's going to go up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court's going to say, "Yep, we want to hear it." But if you want a little teensy tiny bit of hope, and we talked about hope, it's at least something to remain curious about. Mm-hmm. It's this. Apparently, the Fifth Avenue example is now part of the record of the argument in the court below. That means it is subject to being argued in the court above. It's off record. Which in turn, the Fifth Avenue example is predicated on the OLC guidance. One could at least argue, whether credibly or not, remains to be seen, that the OLC memo is properly before the court. Now, what happens?
And then make the commensurate argument that that was faulty reasoning and it's not valid.
Yeah, or just a straight-up statement from the Supreme Court that in no way, shape, or fashion is the president of the United States ever to be deemed above the law, which is what the OLC guidance does.
Right. A yes or no on that. These are issues that, maybe we have to, and that's a big one. But I would like to see smaller steps to take charge to give our republic back.
Yeah, but one does not mean the doing one doesn't mean we can't do the other. My God, like I said, there's a list of things that need to be fixed that we've had exposed through this presidency that is a mile long.
Well, let me a quick for instance. When you and I were younger, like single digit age, when someone was before Congress and it was explained to you, this is a yes or no question. You answered yes or no. You didn't preface your response. It didn't happen the way it happens now. You know, it's almost like a broken windows, which I don't like that broken windows on crime fighting tactic, but it's almost like that. You know, we put up with nonsense and this is what we get. This is crazy. Well, anyway, who knows what's been happening this hour? I hope no more babies are born in this state right now, because if they hear the heartbeat or if it says daddy's child or whatever, incest, and, you know, you hear that, so that's going coming back around. You know that, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. The season is upon us.
I'm babbling. Well, man, happy birthday week and all that good stuff. And we have to try to, you know, stay strong. This is some
here's a fun thought. All we got to do is keep it going to October the 24th, 2020, and it will be like a damn pressure cooker whistling the relief valve right off the top of the pot by then. Because that'll be October 24th, 2020, and we will be 10 days away from the election.
Wow. It's going to be a lot of stuff going on.
Oh, and by the way, David in South Carolina Stan says, state motto, South Carolina state motto, we don't need no education. Thought you'd appreciate that, you being in South Carolina, too.
Of course. Well, look, that's Pink Floydish, you know. Man, yeah, Dave, you got that right. They don't believe in education. Man, they don't. They don't. It's the education they want, you know, just like you were talking about. We don't need no core curriculum. Oh, accept it. That's what you're going to need when you go to university. You know, they're going to laugh at you. Unless you go to Bob Jones or some shit. I don't know. Maybe,
and see, we got two questions. We got two questions coming in from Brother Deacon Asa. One, how long before they tell us the president can't even be tried for crimes, period, whether it's in or out of office? Well, arguably, that we've already been told that when we were told that it was perfectly normal for Gerald Ford to pardon Richard Nixon for all crimes he may have committed, did commit, or might commit. That's a reality. Two, how quickly can we get Obama and Bill to grab a few machine guns and rid America of them?
Oh, no.
Don't even. And before you go, and I got and since we've got the stress line fixed, I've got somebody on it, but we got to have a couple of moments of food porn before we go.
Yeah.
Because you and I specialize. I received a care package.
Uh-oh.
I received a box of ham and bacon.
Damn.
From Benton's Country Hams in East Tennessee.
Oh, my God. You got the cream of the crop. And bacon?
And bacon. So there were BLTs for lunch today, and I've got one waiting. I got a half of one waiting for me for post-show snack.
Oh, did you go to the pig and get some nice juicy red tomatoes?
I've had two of them sitting and ripening in what passes for this autumnal sun.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And I got the salt rising bread that I got from the bread lady on Saturday. Toasted the bread and the bacon grease.
Oh, was it the bridge day Saturday?
Yeah, last Saturday was bridge day. And oh my, yeah. Oh my, that salt rising bread. I got her business card. I'll be calling her periodically. That stuff's pure magic. But here's the thing.
I know you had these.
It was a whole ham sliced and deboned.
No way.
So there, and it's all vacuum sealed. You know, you can't bake these things. They're salty country ham. This is survival food. That's why it's preserved the way it is.
Damn.
But they sent the whole ham, including
the whole ham,
including a magnificent whole ham hock that has been sliced on that bandsaw into four perfect portions.
Whoa.
Shortly before going to air this evening, I looked at Agnes and I said, "Honey, would you mind prepping the crock pot for action?" I said, "There's going to be beans in my life."
Oh yes, yes. I was going to say.
So overnight, I'll soak the beans. And tomorrow morning, early, cover them in water, bury that ham hock deep in the crock pot, and turn that baby on low.
God. That almost makes you want to pray for a nice, cold, rainy day.
Oh,
no.
And cornbread.
Hey, God. Oh, my God. That sounds delicious.
So I just had to share that. I mean, that's just simple country folks food. But whoo, mother.
No, man. That's good food. That, well, whatever. Country, it's just good food, man. You know, if you know how to eat, you know how to eat. And that's the good stuff. Wow, man. I'm glad you were able to share that with everyone. And that sounds beautiful, honest to God. Because there's nothing like a ham hock in the slow cooker with the beans, whatever kind of beans you want, the 15 bean, the black beans, the pintos, whatever. When you have that good, natural smoked ham hock in there, and just let it do its thing. And then you start to smell it, and that aroma wafts through that adobe. And then through, anyway, wow. You got me. That's beautiful. Woo! I feel like I gained 10 pounds listening to that.
There will be photos.
Oh, yeah. I have to follow your Twitter. I have to follow your Twitter. Well, I'm glad you got your phone lines working. That's a good thing. Don't tell Frontier.
No, it's a secret.
Yeah,
we
know how they are.
Yeah. All right, Todd, you have yourself a good evening.
You too. I'm glad I got through, man.
Great hearing from you, man.
You too.
All right, all right. Later. Our buddy Todd calling from South Carolina, Stan. Jack in Shreveport, subject line Fifth Avenue. So then could Trump take an AK-47 and go mow down a bunch of Dems in Congress? According to the OLC guidance, he absolutely could. I'm sorry, but that's what it says. No sitting president may be charged with any crime whatsoever. And that's why that thing's got to go. All right, I think I've got the stress line working. Let's find out if I do. Hey, welcome to the program.
Indeed, you do.
Well, yay, it works. Good evening.
Hey, Jim. Yeah, I'm sorry about all that, but I'm very sensitive about that part of my life, and I didn't want to appear to be an idiot by giving you the wrong title. Pat and I were classmates together.
Were you in the same graduating class?
Yeah. He was in Romeo Company, 4th Battalion. I was in Charlie Company, 1st Battalion. Opposite ends of the parade ground. I knew him well. I was very sad to see that he passed.
Brilliant writer. Brilliant writer.
Yes. Definitely a light that should never have been dimmed, at least when it was dimmed. And I'm just very sensitive about all that. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right. It's all right. No, I wasn't entirely sure what it was I was correcting. That's all. I wasn't sure if I'd said something wrong or you'd said something wrong. I didn't.
No, I'm the one who made the faux pas, and I do apologize. For some reason, I thought that was another book, but actually, it's part of the Lords of Discipline. One of the chapters.
And then the lesser known, the Boo.
I knew him well. Up until his death, he and I used to talk every holiday. And he knew who I was. He always called me his lamb. He was a dear, dear old man.
And now I know you also had some experience, Jim, in attempts at education. I don't mean you were attempting to be educated. I mean, you were attempting to engage in educating others. Did you ever read The Water is Wide?
Bob, I didn't. I'm sorry.
That's the one that got turned in. And I even hate mentioning his name now because he's turned into such an odious POS. But when it was made into a film, they called it Conrack. And it starred John Voight.
Yeah, there was an awful lot of consternation about that whole issue with that book. It was a lot of people. I really was among them. I heard about it through my alumni use and stuff like that, but it was unfortunate, indeed unfortunate.
And it was about Pat Conroy, a very thinly veiled autobiography. It was about Pat Conroy's experience as a public school teacher in South Carolina teaching on an island.
Yeah, Dufusky Island.
Yeah, it was Dufusky. Yeah. And at that point in time, there was no mainland access. You had to take a boat.
Yeah. a ferry, right. Absolutely. I've been there.
And the school was practically non-existent, and the state was perfectly happy to let little African-American children go uneducated. And
I would assume that you're correct in that. I can't understand why they allow that to continue, and I do believe it has been corrected. I would hope. That's a dreadful thing.
Yeah, but it's all both book and film are quite good.
I see.
But everything he wrote was partook of brilliance.
Pat was an extremely talented man, and to have known him personally, I feel that my life has been greatly enriched by him. I really do. We went through a lot together, a lot. And I can see eye to eye with most of what he's tried to convey. I hate to say it, I have just a welling of tears in my eyes. Let me tell you something else that happened. We're having our little set too. The light in my tablet went dim, and I couldn't see anything, and I had to call Amazon to go into the monitor really to get it corrected. And I said, "Oh, I'll have to buy another tablet." Thank God. Well, how are you doing?
I'm just curious. What kind of? You'd mentioned you're only using a tablet now. What kind of tablet are you using?
The 10, Amazon 10.
Oh, the Amazon Fire.
Fire 10. Yeah, it's great. I don't have to use anything else, and that makes it very easy on me too. It really does.
Yeah, I have no experience with those Amazon Fire tablets, so I don't really. You know, you were talking about how to get the program and everything because you were using TuneIn, and TuneIn can be a little bit sketchy at times.
Bob, I hate that TuneIn. They come into stuff and they override stuff that I'm looking at, and I just don't have any use for it at all. I just don't, and I never use it. I can't use it. I'm just not able to.
That's what I was getting at. That's the nice thing about the way Brother Deacon Asa has the current horn site set up. It's listenable across platforms. It used to be that you'd have to have some sort of app or external player. You can just go to headon.live and you're good to go.
Well, that's the simplest way, the best way. My compliments to Brother Asa for having done that. I'm really glad that he did, and I owe him a debt for having done so. Thank you, Asa. He's a very nice person. I've heard him. You've got some very good people to help you out there. I'm glad you have the support. I really am.
Well, it's amazing. The whole community is, and you know, as I've been contemplating the anniversary that comes tomorrow.
I was your first caller, bud.
Yes, you were. Yes, you were. And
absolutely.
It remains amazing to me. Not any effort that I've made, but the effort that this community has made to keep this all going. And that kind of came home to me when Dr. Bill was talking about it earlier today.
I didn't hear that, but I can certainly agree with you there. You've got a lot of wonderful people there. You really do. And they all coalesce so well. And they come together and they always have good information and good opinions. And I agree with most of them, absolutely.
Yeah, it's absolutely breathtaking to contemplate this long doing this the way we've done it.
You have accomplished deal, and you've had a lot of people behind you. And I know I listen to you every day. And I enjoy the show. I enjoy the people, what they have to say. And I love your reportage on what are you calling Nitwit Nero?
Nitwit Nero, Julius Geezer, Geezer Disgustus, Venereal Vespasian, Chlamydia Claudius.
Oh, God. You are very creative in that aspect. Just don't get one for me, please. But honestly, truly, I cannot believe that, man. I sit here every night, and, you know, I just think, just when I think the screen has reached its fulfillment of horror, new wonders indeed appear. And I'm very afraid to have him as my commander-in-chief. I really am. I mean, dimwit leader was bad enough, but my God, this man is just dreadful, horrible.
Well, he is that intersection between ignorance and malevolence that I kind of wonder if it has always stalked us.
I don't know, Bob, but I know with him and his career, he's been just exactly like that. I remember him from my New York days. All my friends in New York just hated him, but he was just reviled. And, you know, he hasn't changed any since he was, the big guy in Manhattan. The only thing I ever heard him do was positive was he did do a good job on Woolen Rink in Central Park. He used to go to a lot of concerts there. Had a lot of fun there. I was glad they got the old rink back. Had a marvelous Todd Rundgren concert there, and I've got the album for it, but I digress. I'm sorry, but yeah.
No, that's quite all right.
I would say he's an asshole, but an asshole who has some sensitivity and use, but he has.
Well, I think you earned a cowbell on that one, Jim. No sense in denigrating assholes by calling them Trumps. Oh, did I? Well, I've got it fixed, Jim. It's not completely fixed though. Lost you there
your
for a second.
Line?
Yeah, I got no. The Bluetooth just dropped out. That's a failure.
Oh,
this
boy.
Little box, but no, no. You got
all these things we have as they crown, they will crucify, will they not?
Yeah, absolutely. On an almost nightly basis.
Absolutely.
I just had the nail holes. I had them made permanent. I just slip it. Boom. There we go.
Very
Jim, you have yourself a good evening. And
by the way,
yeah.
May I ask about fur?
Sure. It's
just say how is he?
He's not okay.
I'm sorry.
They're not exactly diligent or particularly mindful about med call.
Bob, as you try to maneuver your way through the legal and the medical problems in this state, you have my deepest support and prayer, like the prayer I sent you this morning.
I saw that. Thank
you.
I did. Thank you.
And I really poured out my heart in that. I really did. Because, you know, the lady who helps me, Chris, and I sent her a card to your station address. I don't even know if you've been able to pick it up yet.
I was planning on picking it up when hopefully soon we get to go and get him out.
Well, I wish you every success and doing that with the least amount of stress and drama possible. Because I was very, very concerned about him, about you and your family. And I've talked to some friends of mine who listen to you as well, and they were concerned too. And so...
Well, thank you for that. I hope we can get some sort of resolution, but it is... damnably frustrating and damnably difficult.
I understand, sir, but, you know, I feel that young man is a fine young man, and I think that once these difficulties and issues can be addressed, that he will be able to return to the bosom of his family and the love that he's always had there. And that's what I tried to tell you this morning.
I hope so, too. I hope so, too. Thank you, Jim.
I know you don't like prayers and stuff like that, but, you know, I pray, and I believe in prayer.
Well, I'm not going to tell anybody to or not to, because I'm that in earnest about, you know, the reality of freedom of religion.
Oh, okay. But Bob, even the positive thoughts that people have, I believe their thoughts in certain cases have wings, and they can ameliorate quite handily.
I certainly hope so. I do hope so.
Well, Jim, you've had nothing but good vibrations coming from me, and Patch is here, who's on top of me, and I sent you the pictures of her. I think you know her better, as well as I do.
She's a lovely cat, and I even held my tablet up and showed Patches to Mushu and Nyx.
Oh my! Oh, by the way, we put up a Halloween tree on my patio.
I saw that.
You saw that?
I did.
Well, there's very little that I do see you. As a matter of fact, you could probably come here and walk in my front door and know exactly where everything is.
I don't normally do that. I appreciate that, Jim. I do.
I don't normally do that, Bob, but somehow I feel very safe and very assured in having done that. And with your kind permission, I'll send you lots more as they are generated. And like I say, going back to the original thing, I'm not trying to keep you, but that portion of my life when I was a cadet at the Citadel, it was rough. It was very, very rough. And
I dare say that you're probably minimizing to a certain extent, just for the sake of simplicity.
Well, yeah.
And nobody went through that place who had an easy time of it, did they?
Let me say this to you. First, I'm looking at my diploma now, and I'm thinking about tides. That freshman year began in August, and it went all the way through with all the fourth class system of one being called pleads and nods and having to drive around the barracks at 180 steps a minute with your chin racked in, being harassed by upperclassmen. At meals, it was horrible. My weight went down to 120 pounds, and I'm a fairly tall man. And I basically, my mother saw me, and she said, "My God, you look like something from Dachau." It just burst into tears. And, of course, my father was a driving force for me having gone there, because everybody gone there in my family, and they just had a tremendous set to. They did. However, I got through it. I made it through it. There were things about it that taught me a lot about, different things, personal habits, and we had a lot of fun there, too. Believe it or not, a lot of fun. As a matter of fact, I spent my summers there as a camp counselor at the Mark Clark Boys Camp for 3 years. I loved being in Charleston. It was a hell of a lot better than the hometown in Kansas.
Well,
and Charleston was a lot of fun.
There's a lot to be said for Charleston.
Can I tell you one little story, please?
Mm-hmm.
The day that Saddam invaded Kuwait, I was in Washington at the Department of Education convention. And all of a sudden, after lunch, we were bused to the White House to meet Mrs. Bush. And when I met her, she saw my name tag. And she said, "Where did you go to school?" And I said, "She's from South Carolina." And I said, "The Citadel." And she said, "Jim, I used to date a lot of Citadel boys, because, you know, I went to Ashley Hall." And we had a delightful time. I said, "Ma'am, I would love to be a partner at Bridge with you." She was wonderful. I know you don't like her, but I did have that experience with her at the White House, at a reception, just a lovely thing. It was really nice. And the same day, Saddam invaded Kuwait.
Well, you know, it's all become a sliding scale, hasn't it, Jim? Because
I guess so.
Because I don't think you could have that conversation with somebody who sounded like Dracula talking to you.
No, sir. She was...
"Jim, I love that place." Blah.
Well, she was a very sharp person. And, you know, her husband, compared to what we've got now, my God, he's a prince, even though he did invade Kuwait or Iraq.
Well, it's kind of like what I was talking about with Todd, Jim. It is a continuum. It is a linear, not progression, but degression.
Exactly. And, you know, Bob, I was heavily involved in that war, very heavily. And I can't say how and when, but I did try to do two things. I did try to take care of soldiers. With their education and their medical and their treatments And also, I was a casualty officer. That's so fun.
Oh, no. No, no, no. That's bad.
You don't want to...
That's bad duty.
But nonetheless, I've had some fairly interesting times, and I guess graduating from the Citadel kind of helped me with DOD and my federal career. So I'm afraid it has, as of late, exacted a rather fearsome toll in many respects, because I don't have any flashbacks with whom I comported.
They're gone.
All that. Yes. And they're, pardon me, there is more than one war that has really involved me. And there ain't nothing good about either of them. And I, of course, you know, I respect the military greatly. I love it. It has a purpose. But it shouldn't be controlled by idiots.
No, that's when it becomes more dangerous than it is even designed to be.
Exactly. And you always have somebody out there who tried to be more royalist than the king, if you know what I mean, sir.
Yep.
And, but...
Well, I am curious. I think you would agree that while there are members of the military who think like we do, obviously...
yes, sir.
There's probably a heavy majority that leans more toward the authoritarian and right wing side. It can't help but be that way. But considering,
indeed, you're right.
But considering the dishonor to which those Green Berets were subjected, my God, how can you how can you talk about esprit de corps and go home and go to wherever you live at the end of the day and take off that uniform and put on that maggot hat now when the military has been dishonored as badly as it has been?
Let me paraphrase this. One cannot do that and be any type of human being, in my opinion, really. These people are just absolutely crazy, these maggots, or whatever you want to call them. And I will echo what you have said in the past. We are definitely approaching, if not engaged in, a cold civil war.
And that's why I was running those clips earlier this evening. There are people who want it to get hotter than it already is.
Of course they do. And why, I can't understand.
And people, people like the clips I played earlier will never hear a shot fired in anger. Rick Wiles will never attend a funeral. He will, he's such a sick man that, you know, he celebrated the Pulse nightclub shooting because people he didn't like got killed.
Because they were gay.
Right.
And that is indeed horrible. And that man, absolutely, he's just a very sick person in how he can live with himself. I do not know. I do not understand people like that, Bob. I don't. And I try to understand all kinds of behavior. I have been able to, in many cases. But that type of behavior, to me, is just the absolute opposite of everything that I've been brought up to revere and cherish and guard. It really is. We don't need to have people like that making it difficult, people who already have enough difficulty. And I see these things that are being made about transgender people. Why do they even bother? I don't understand this. Didn't they understand what these people are going through?
Jim, it's not that they don't understand. They flat don't care. Remember,
you got it.
The opposite of hate is not love. The opposite of hate is ambivalence.
Well, that's a good point you just made, Bob. You really hit it right on the head. I tend to agree with you 110% plus side. And all I can say is, it's like I said earlier, I think, when I see Trump pull these stunts with all his tweets and all this crap, and just the reaction that is being achieved by the White House. And I just think, my God, just when the screen has reached the heights of its horror, a new wonder appears. And that's exactly what I see on my flat screen. It's just horror whenever that bastard gets on. He was on this afternoon about Syria and stuff like that.
Oh, congratulating himself again. I'm sorry. You know, there's too much to get to in 3 hours of program. If you're gonna actually do any depth about it, but declaring that he's done it a couple of times now, declaring that he saved millions of lives by subjecting the Kurds to a genocide.
My friend Chrissy, who helps me here, is the sweetest person in the world. Would never say anything untoward. When she heard that, I heard her say, "What the fuck?" And I said, "Chris," and she said, "Can you believe that bastard? I've never heard her swear in my life." And she's one of the decent human beings in the world and would do anything she could for anybody. And if there are angels walking on this planet, she's one of them. And I'm lucky to have met her. I really am. And I don't mean to get in my personal situation.
No. That's okay. You know, the fact that the Turkey sanctions got lifted today. Well, I tell you what, they sure had an impact. 5 days.
Yeah. And
of course, Putin and Erdogan sat down in Sochi and signed a sort of Sykes-Picot of their own, carving up Syria between Turkey and Russia. That happened today.
Well, that's what Putin's been up to all along, don't you think?
Yeah.
That's what he's.
And so they own, and this is such a PR coup for them. Because they own the narrative now that if you're Russia's ally, Russia will stick by you through thick and thin. But if you're America's ally, America will dump you in a minute.
Indeed they have. May I reflect on something quickly?
Yes, do please.
When I was a boy growing up, I was introduced to Peter the Great, to my fifth grade history teacher. And I found him to be absolutely fascinating. And I loved him. I really did. He was innovative. He was effective. He could be rough. But he dragged his country into the modern world. And did so pretty much in a fairly positive manner. I'm sure there were those who didn't agree, but nonetheless. And that's the way I began to feel about Russia. And I've always loved Russia for its composers, it's writers, oh my God, the Russian, Jesus, and the ability of his people to come back from so much. And my heart is, and I think throughout this experience I've had with you, I think you've been able to tell that. I think that
Stress
was commented, you know, that he agreed with me and he was very complimentary to me. I will never forget that, gentleman. And I miss him terribly. I really do, even now.
Mighty good folks.
And he was. But, you know, I have always tried to give the Russians the benefit of the doubt. I always have. But it seems to...
Well, for the most part, it's not the Russian people. It's the Russian leadership. And,
exactly.
And as I have argued, if you have a solid, functional understanding of the Byzantine Empire... then you're well on the way to understanding Russia. And if you don't,
indeed, you're right.
If you don't, you're going to have a hard time wrapping your mind around it, or you're going to be
exactly.
prone to saying, well, I guess that's just how they are. You know,
a
millennium or more of culture and conduct will produce a given result.
Yes, sir, it will. Indeed, it will.
And so I know you love having good things to read. This book came out several years ago. I can't remember the author, but it's a fantastic distillation of, you know, 1,000 years of the Byzantine Empire, and it's called Lost.
May I ask you that?
It's called Lost to the West.
Lost to the West, and who's the writer, please?
And that's what I can't tell you.
So,
hang on a second. Maybe I can pull it up here. Where's my? There it is. Okay. Here we go. This tablet is so old and so slow.
That's okay. I had to.
I can remember when it was fast.
Oh yeah.
This is a.
I can remember when I was fast.
Yeah. This is a first generation iPad Air.
That does go back a little while, though, doesn't it? No problem.
It is lost to the West. The forgotten Byzantine Empire that rescued Western civilization. And I'm looking for the author now. No, don't go away. Lars Brown Worth.
Oh.
Lars Brown Worth. W-O-R-T-H.
I'm going to have to order that. I thought at one time you mentioned it. I thought I did have it, and then I kind of lost track of trying to locate it. And I'm going to have to order that. Indeed, I will. And
I go back and read it. I go back and read it every two or three years.
Yeah. And the experiences of the Byzantine Empire, oh, Lord. They were something else, were they not? All the stuff that was going on there.
It all begins with the split of the Roman Empire into two halves, the Western and the Eastern, because it had become unmanageable. The guy who does that, Diocletian, I think it was, then says, "Screw all this! I'm retiring." And built a palace in Croatia.
Split. I've been there.
Yeah, that still exists. You know exactly. Yeah, our buddy Chris in Germany has sent me photos as well. Fantastic.
It's gorgeous.
And when they begged him to come out of retirement, he said that running the empire could not compare with the joy he had growing cabbages.
Well, I guess he knew whereof he spoke.
Yeah.
I guess it had become so onerous to him to see it go down. He probably knew that he was probably the last of the Caesars.
Well, he set up a workable system, but like any system, it had inherent flaws. And what Lars Worth points out is that he probably should have known, or he knew and couldn't find a way around the fact that whoever he appointed, you know, the two top of the heap guys in the West and the East, he referred to as Augustuses, and then there were second tier emperors who were called Caesars. It had gone from being in the case of Augustus an honorific, and in the case of Caesar a patronymic, to being official formal royal titles. And of course from there, the Serbs eventually, the Serbs and the Bulgars eventually adopt the Slavic version, Tsar, and that's how you want, and then it makes it to Kievan Rus, and from Kievan Rus it makes it to Moscow, and you know that history. But the thing that Worth talks about is that he either should have anticipated or did and just couldn't do anything about it. The fact that the children of the people he set up as Augustuses were going to feel like they had some sort of hereditary interest in being next. And that's how you wind up with Constantine, the son of Constantius, battling at the Milvian Bridge and the Inhoc Signo Wincase, and after that, history changes forever.
Yes, sir, it did. Absolutely. It certainly did. And, you know, when Ivan the Terrible became Tsar, he was looking for a religion for Russia. And he had pondered Catholicism, didn't want that because he had the Pope to deal with. Church was too damn independent. And he thought about the Muslims. He said, no, didn't want that. And so he went to Byzantium and picked the Greek Orthodox Church, which became the Russian Orthodox Church. Excuse me, sir. But nonetheless, it's amazing how their history has devolved upon us. And, you know, I had briefly hoped back in 91 that we would see some better. But what was the Soviet Union has become nothing but more than a fascist. You described it yet last night. A fascist state ruled by a mob boss.
Yeah, yeah.
That's basically what it's like.
By the way, you had a you have a lovely note here from Lady B. Subject
oh,
line.
Bless her.
Yeah, always praying for Jim. Love you, Jim.
I love you too, Lady B. I think you're a wonderful person, and you are to me the epitome of style. Mixed quite well with substance, and I love the stuff you contribute to this program. It's one of the reasons I keep continuing. That's Bob too, but you're one of them. Absolutely. You've got some good people out there.
Oh, a lot.
You've got Tracy. No. Tracy, and Tracy is just incredible with her efforts to improve herself and lengthen her life and improve her appearance. And I think that's wonderful. I really do. I have a lot of admiration for Tracy. She might not for me, but I do for her. And there are others, too. And I might not get along too well if I'm on your front porch because some of the people might want to kick me off. But hey, that's part of the game. That's part of being on the front porch. But I never quite get into that, and I've never been in the chat room. And I guess...
Yeah,
I,
that's the one thing. Tablets don't handle that stuff particularly well.
No, they don't, but that's okay. You know, I don't comport that well. I've become sort of catchers, and I have become like our prisoners in the Vatican. But that's okay. We do fine. I can do a lot worse.
Well, at least you're not the little princes in the tower.
No, absolutely not. But I will say that you mentioned The Little Prince. That is one incredible book.
Oh, it's lovely. It's absolutely
it
lovely.
Is. And I will never forget what he said, what he wrote, that it is only with the heart that one can see rightly, for that which is truly important is often invisible to the eye.
Indeed.
And Jean Jupiter, God bless him, he may not have learned his English too well, but he sure came about. Because I can tell you, when I first read that book, it was in French. Because, you know, that's just the way we're taught. That was in high school. And I cannot ever miss an opportunity to recommend that book for anyone of any age. And I sincerely believe in that. And I thank you for the contributions that you've made in this program. You have enriched my life greatly. You and I have come to... we've had our problems, but we've always managed to solve those, always managed to come back.
Absolutely.
Hell, I couldn't give you up if I had to, Bob.
Hey, Jim, I do.
I
do have to go, my friend. I do, because I got to get this thing uploaded, and we got Ferg's last.
Take care.
We got Ferg's last
and
phone call
you.
Of the evening coming up. I want to make sure I'm there for that.
Oh, good. Listen, please give him my best, if you will.
I
he
certainly
might not
will.
Know me, but tell him I know him. And I have always been rooting for him, and he's going to make it just fine.
All right, I'll do that. Jim, you take care.
You take care. God bless them.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
That's our buddy Jim, not too awfully far from here. One last note from Lady B. You've educated me, opened my mind, and enriched my life. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for changing my life, and I promise you when I have, you will have. Thank you, Lady B. You make a lot of... You make a lot of minds ponder things in ways that maybe they might not otherwise have, and you never fail to bring your A game, as the saying goes. Thank you so much, and thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so do. Thank you to all of you who keep the program going in what has turned out to be a little bit of a community-made miracle. Year in and year out. Thank you. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Steve in the chat room this evening. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina. It's all for you. I love you, son. We love you, son. Later.